All right, it is 6 o'clock. I'd like to welcome everyone to our Planning and Zoning Commission meeting this day, February 6, 2024. Please, Ms. Ancona, if I can have the roll call when you're ready.
Commissioner Keller? Commissioner Nichols?
Present.
Commissioner Thomas?
Present.
Commissioner Wilson?
Present.
Commissioner Zielinski?
Present.
Vice Chair Outlaw Ryan?
Present.
And Chair Clark?
Present. Now, if you please, everyone rise and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you so much. Again, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this evening. Just a few items, housekeeping items. The restrooms and drinking fountain are right out this door to the right, if you should so need. If you wish to speak during call to audience or the public hearing, please fill out one of these blue cards. They're back there in the back of the table. And bring them right on up to our recording secretary, Ms. Ancona. And as a reminder, speakers are limited to 3 minutes. All right, next we're going to open the call to audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to Arizona open meeting law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take any legal action during call to audience. In order to speak during call to audience, please specify what you wish to discuss when completing a blue card. Ms. Ancona, do we have any blue cards?
Not for the call to audience.
I do have one card for Mr. Ron Locher. Are you here? Is dismiss? Okay. All right. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and close call to audience. And now I would like to turn the time over to Ms. Vice Mayor Melanie Barrett for Council Liaison Comments.
Great, thank you. It's good to see you all here tonight. We don't have any planning items since our last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Tomorrow night is our council meeting. We have a presentation tomorrow regarding the town's progress in implementing the Your Voice, Our Future General Plan. And then our following council meeting on the 21st, we'll hear the update on the community's progress in creating the next 10-year plan, known as OV Path Forward. And so to everyone in the audience or listening that's here today, OV Path Forward is the name of the effort to gather community input for our next general plan. So there's a website associated with that. So we'd love to have your input and as much citizen input moving forward as we can. So if you could go to that website and register for that, then you can help us to plan the future of Oro Valley. So we'd really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice Mayor Barrett. All right. We'll go ahead and move into agenda item number one. Ms. Ancona, will you please read that item?
Review and approval of the January 12, 2024 study session and January 16, 2024 special session meeting minutes.
Thank you. Do we have a motion?
Yes, I move to approve the January 12, 2024 and January 16, 2024 meeting minutes.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, motion carried 7-0. Ms. Ancona, may I have the next item, please?
Presentation about the community's effort to create the next 10-year plan known as Oro Valley's Path Forward.
Thank you, Ms. Ancona. And Ms. Sims, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Chair Clark, Commissioners. My name is Melanie Sims. I'm a principal planner with the Town of Oro Valley. And the purpose of this item is to update the commission about the community's work to create the next 10-year plan known as OV's Path Forward, and present additional opportunities to get involved. First and foremost, I want to thank everyone who has participated in this important effort to date. So far, we have received over 2,000 comments from residents and community members through an interactive website and during events at local businesses, restaurants, parks, and more. The resident-driven community engagement plan lays out the tools and methods that we are using to involve the community, making sure participation is convenient, meaningful, fun, and inclusive were all key principles of the community engagement plan. So with that in mind, there are still plenty of opportunities for people to get involved. This includes a 10-minute survey that is available on ovpathforward.com through March 15th. There's also several more ways you can share your ideas and perspectives online or attend any of our weekly events that I will briefly touch on later in this presentation. So the process to create the next 10-year action plan is divided into three phases. During this first phase, our goals are to raise awareness and educate the community about the importance of the plan and their involvement, but most importantly is to listen to their ideas and perspectives for Oro Valley's future. Significant community engagement will continue throughout the spring. However, it will slow down in May and June as we take all the comments we received as well as the survey responses and start synthesizing through those to establish themes. These themes will ultimately create a draft vision and values for the community that will create the foundation for the plan. So to conclude this phase, we will take that draft vision and values back out to the community to make sure it accurately represents them, and that will happen later towards the end of the summer. And we will also be back to the commission seeking endorsement of the vision and values and to commission as well as town council later this year. So as prescribed in the community engagement plan, we have used a variety of tools to get the word out. This includes online awareness through articles, podcasts, and videos, but also visibility in the community with signs, posters, and magnets on town vehicles. To ensure we include all geographical areas, we are mapping where information has been distributed as well as events have occurred. And as you can see on the screen, we still have some work to do over the next couple of months to make sure all areas are covered. A primary tool that was identified in the community engagement plan was having an interactive website. This is especially important for convenience and accessibility. So to date, we have received over 1,000 contributions online, and this is through forums, polls, an idea board, as well as a mapping tool. In fact, this is the first time that the town has invited people to identify areas on a map where they like to bike or walk, or they see that safety improvements are needed for roadways or trails. So I encourage everyone to visit the website often as new topics such as water, town finances, and development launch monthly, as well as ways for them to share their ideas. Another great way to stay engaged and to know when new things are being launched is to follow OV Path Forward on Facebook or Instagram. So again, with inclusiveness in mind and accessibility, we also want to make sure all demographic groups in Oro Valley are included in this process. So in efforts to get participation higher, we make sure we go out to where people are already gathering. So this includes farmers markets, trailheads, soccer and softball practices, local businesses and restaurants, as well as HOA meetings. And through this, we've collected just a little over 1,700 comments. Just to update the commission, what we've heard so far out in the community and online is that people said they like the friendliness, safe, and clean environment of Oro Valley best. The views, natural beauty, and outdoor activities are what Oro Valley should be known for. And looking to the future, managing growth as it relates to water use, traffic, and services is important. Also, being more self-sufficient with more things to do within town limits as well as housing options has also been voiced over the last few months. So I just want to end with another call to action to everybody. We really need everybody's voice in this very important effort. The plan will only be accurate and relevant if there's high community participation. It's also the best way for residents to spark action in the community because the general plan does produce meaningful results. So For everyone in this room and listening, please make sure you go online. You can scan the QR code. I'll leave this here for a moment and take the survey. We also have comment cards that are around town. There's one at Stacks Book Club, for instance, where you can answer. It can provide your information. We have events ongoing weekly. On Thursday, we'll be at Fork and Fire. So if you're interested to stop by and get some lunch or dinner, there's signs throughout the community as well as many opportunities online. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions the commission may have.
Thank you so much, Ms. Sim. Commission, any questions?
Yes, Chair, I have one question. Ms. Sims, thank you again for your time. Are there any challenges that your team has faced that you might need help with from residents or from others?
Sure. Chair Clark, Commissioner Thomas, thank you for the question. Any help we can get to spread the word, especially through groups that people are already involved in, is appreciated, especially HOAs. If you attend an HOA meeting, if your HOA has a newsletter, please let us know. We'd be happy to forward them information and help spread the word that way. Or even if you're in a sports club, a special interest group, any way we can get the word out would be appreciated.
Thank you. Any other comments from the commission? No? I have a couple things. I've seen your videos and the signs throughout town. I think they're great. The videos are fun on social media. I've seemed to be getting good engagement. One question I do have, though, is of those 1,700 comments, are we tracking who are people that actually live in town versus not?
Chair Clark, thank you for the question. So, yes, we are. So, on the website, we do ask people to let us know if they're a resident or not. And then out when we're at community events, we notate on the post-it if they're a resident. So we can track that.
Thank you. And do we know how many of those 1,700 are residents versus not?
We do. I just don't know off the top of my head. I do know I would say 60 to 70% are residents. And that's just a guesstimate. But I do know the majority are residents.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to our next agenda item, Ms. Ancona.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding three items related to the proposed development of 132 multifamily units on an approximately 8.7-acre site located on Vistoso Highlands Drive, approximately a quarter mile west of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard on the old clubhouse site. The applications include item A, rezoning approximately 0.7 acres, planned area development amendment, from open space to recreation golf course, and to relocate a planned trail to adjacent town property. Item B, development and landscape plans, and item C, architecture.
All right, thank you so much. Mr. Spaeth, it's all yours.
Thank you, Chair. Commission members, members of the audience, my name is Michael Spaeth, principal planner with the town of Oro Valley. As Ms. Ancona just read, our purpose tonight is for a public hearing for the applicant's request to develop 132 multifamily rental units with a maximum building height of 32 feet and two stories. To accommodate this design are the three requests before the commission this evening. The first is a rezoning from open space to recreation/golf course that also includes a request to move a trail onto town property for the area shown in blue in the image on the screen. Item B is the development and landscape plans for the entire site, and then item C is the proposed architecture. I will be providing a staff recommendation this evening, and then these items are presented for commission.
Having a hard time hearing you, Mr. Spaeth.
Sorry, thank you. These items are presented for discussion and possible action this evening. So to just quickly orient everyone with respect to the subject property, it's approximately 8.7 acres in size, shown in yellow here on the screen, and is located south of Vistoso Highlands, approximately one quarter mile west of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. As you can see in the image, it is the site of the old clubhouse for the golf club at Vistoso. Again, the applicant's site design is for 132 multifamily units with a max height of 32 feet or two stories. It includes two access points off Vistoso Highlands Drive, several recreational amenities, including a clubhouse, a swimming pool, a dog park, and a tot lot playground. It provides approximately 36% open space, which is more than the 30% required for HDR zoning district in the Rancho Vistoso PAD. That open space calculation includes both recreational open space as well as landscaped open space. And the site's proposal also includes relocating that planned trail, as I mentioned previously. So just to quickly provide some background on the property, it was annexed into the town in 1987 as part of the original adoption of the Rancho Vistoso PAD, which established the site's existing zoning. So there are three parts or components, if you will, to the applicant's design. The first is for the high-density residential zoned property shown in brown, highlighted with the number one. That property, again, has been zoned high-density residential since 1987, and apartments are a permitted use in that zoning district. The second component or area is zoned recreation slash golf course, what we're referring to as the expansion area, shown here in dark green with the letter with the number two on it. And then the third is the zoned open space, and that's known as the rezoning parcel shown here with number three. So for those of you who have lived in the area, you know the golf club originally opened in 1994 and ultimately closed in 2019. In 2022, a settlement agreement that reflected this existing zoning was reached regarding the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. And that agreement was between the town, the conservation fund, the former property owner, and the applicant this evening. In that agreement, it specified several things: that the applicant could build up to 132 multifamily units on the clubhouse parcel, again, highlighted with the number one. And it also granted the applicant's use of approximately 1.5 acres of land within the preserve, again, shown as the expansion area, for limited development for things like parking, drainage, and utilities. So now that we've kind of set the stage, first item again is that proposed rezoning or PAD amendment from open space to recreation slash golf. It is worth noting that it is only for the 0.7 or 0.69 acre property outlined in blue, and the request is to enable development of parking, a small rec area, and refuse associated with the applicant's site design. The recreation slash golf course zoning district within the PAD has historically included uses associated with private rec and golf courses, including things like driving ranges, clubhouses, recreational amenities, and their associated refuse and parking needs. The applicant's request is consistent with this historical precedent. This item also includes, as mentioned previously, a request to move a planned trail onto town property within the preserve, highlighted here in orange in the right-hand image. Should the rezoning request be ultimately approved by town council, the applicant has agreed to develop a public trailhead for the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. The proposed location is shown here on screen, highlighted with the green star, would be developed by the applicant at his sole cost, and would provide approximately 21 parking spaces with a low-maintenance surface and ADA-compliant spaces and connections to the larger trail connection system in the preserve. It is worth noting that there will not be a vehicular connection between the applicant's apartment development and this public trailhead. Construction of this trailhead is required by the condition listed in Attachment 1 prior to the issuance of any building permits for the apartment buildings, as once construction begins and the removal of the parking lot happens, of course, there will be a need for another parking area for preserve users. This item is consistent with both the general plan and all zoning code requirements. Both the existing and proposed zoning districts are compliant with the property's general plan land use designation of open space. The recreation slash golf course zoning district in the Rancho Vistoso PAD, again, enables development of private rec and parking areas for the things I mentioned previously, things like driving ranges and clubhouse. It is worth noting that this former golf course site and the Stone Canyon Golf Course have or had had these types of uses in the past. The applicant has conducted the required cultural resources inventories on the property and meets all other applicable development standards. For item B, the proposed development plan and landscape plan, again, the applicant is proposing 132 multifamily units in seven buildings. With respect to the landscape plan, the site design includes all code-required buffer yards, screen walls, including screen walls around parking areas, and revegetation of all disturbed areas within, including the drainage basins in the expansion area as required by code. Of course, the applicant is here this evening and will provide a bit more detail during their presentation. I do have one change from the packet that you received. So staff is asking that planning condition 2 for item B be stricken as part of the motion for that item, which is relative to no structures within the expansion area. And we're requesting that that be stricken as both the town and the conservation holder, Desert Archaeology, are comfortable with the proposed covered parking that has been included on the applicant's design. So when we get to that point, I'll remind Commission that we're just asking that to be removed as part of the motion. For item C, the architecture, again, 7 buildings as part of the site design includes a clubhouse. Their proposal includes 4-sided architecture with varied roof and wall planes, as you can see in their rendering here. It incorporates desert colors, materials, and textures, and per code, all mechanical equipment will be fully screened. At this point, the applicant has met with the Rancho Vistoso Architecture Review Committee, and their request has been recommended for approval to the larger HOA board. The public participation process for the project has been extensive. To date, we've, of course, produced an informational video that I hope most folks have viewed. We've held 2 neighborhood meetings with some common topics that were discussed or themes, including things like traffic, compatibility with the area, and the apartment use. Of course, additional correspondence from neighbors has been received, and those have been included in your packet this evening, as well as some that were emailed by Ms. Ancona earlier today that we received today. So hopefully you receive those. Staff would also like to point out that the town has taken steps to address an existing construction traffic issue in this area that is not related to the applicant's proposal. But to address that existing issue that has been affecting neighbors, signs are going up or have gone up that will limit parking and idling at the rear Stone Canyon gate so that between the hours of 5 a.m. and 9 a.m., parking or idling is no longer going to be allowed and will be ticketable by the police department during weekday hours. So that is something the town has taken. We heard during the neighborhood meeting process that that's been an ongoing concern. Again, that wasn't associated with the applicant's request, but because it's in the realm, we did want to point that out, that the town engineer and public works staff have taken that extra step. So in summary, the applicant is proposing 132 multifamily rental units, and of course the 3 items I've discussed are up for consideration and possible recommendation this evening. Some key aspects to keep in mind is that on the HDR piece outlined in red, apartments are currently entitled. And there were some agreements, of course, back when the nature preserve was created that allowed approximately 1.5 acres of use shown there in yellow for associated parking and drainage facilities. With that, Chair, staff recommends conditional approval of items A and B, subject to the conditions listed in Attachment 1, again, with the proposed condition change to item B, planning condition 2. And then also recommend approval of item C. As a reminder, there are 3 separate motions required tonight, and the recommendations for items B and C are dependent upon the recommendation for item A. Thank you, Chair. That concludes my presentation, and the applicant has a presentation as well.
Thank you, Mr. Spaeth. I'd like to now invite up Mr. Rulli, property owner, and Mr. Juneman, attorney for Lazarus and Sylvan.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Rory Juneman. I'm a land use attorney with Lazarus and Sylvan in Tucson, and we represent Ross Rolney as a developer. I want to start off by introducing our team that's here tonight, because some of them most likely will be up here helping answer questions. First of all, Ross Rolney is right there. He's the developer of the property, the owner and the developer of the property. Our consultant team consists of Kevin Hall, who is our civil engineer. He's from Rick Engineering. Daniel Bradshaw is our landscape architect. He's with the Planning Center. And then Grace Shao and Barack Beckett are from A23 Studios. They're our architects on the project. So if you have any questions that are related to any of their areas of specialty, we'll be bringing them up and having them answer. So I want to start off by thanking you all for serving on the commission. Takes a lot of time, and we appreciate it. I understand that three of you are actually brand new, and you definitely picked an interesting case for your first one. And quite frankly, most cases aren't like this. This is a case that on some levels is pretty simple. Our rezoning area is tiny. It's 0.7 acres. And in and of itself, it's really not a big ask. But when you combine it with the other aspects of this project, where we're proposing apartments, that obviously has kind of filled up the room. But another aspect of this case that makes it complicated is the settlement agreement that really our case stemmed from. So I'm going to start off by giving a little bit of background on the property, kind of reiterating what Mr. Space said, but then I'm going to let Mr. Rolney talk about the settlement agreement, and then we'll go back to really the nuts and bolts of our case. So you all are familiar with the project location. That's basically the clubhouse from the Vistoso Golf Course. To kind of, again, reiterate what Mr. Space said, our project really involves two parts of the property. The area in pink is our rezoning area. Again, it's 0.7 acres. For reference, if you look at this parcel and the parcel to the north of it, those are 0.78 acres. So in relation to the surrounding area, what we're asking for is pretty small in scope. See if I can do this. Well, that's okay. I'll get to it later. Thank you. But the whole site is about 6.8 acres. Of that 6.1 acres, which you see in green, was rezoned to high-density residential back in 1987. So it has allowed apartments for several decades. Now, as long as it was going to be the clubhouse for the golf course, that wasn't going to happen. But in 2019... things changed, and this whole area changed, and really the response from that change and the response for that involved the settlement agreement and the preserve also has led to the development of this property. But I'll tell you, even if that hadn't happened, multifamily zone property in this area, whether it was Mr. Rolney or somebody else, it's going to be developed as apartments, and that's what Mr. Rolney intends to do. But again, this whole story, the whole background really begins with the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve, the efforts to preserve it, the settlement agreement that really resulted in the outcome of, you know, the backdrop to this is 202 acres are preserved in perpetuity for the town. And as part of that process, Mr. Rolney, as well as the town, as well as the Conservation Fund and the residents who participated in fundraising, were all essential to that. So I'd like Ross to give a little bit of background on that process and really why our project has sort of evolved from that process and why that settlement process was important. So, Ross.
Members of the commission, thank you for allowing me to speak tonight in front of you. I wasn't going to speak tonight, and it wasn't until the recommendation of staff this morning asked me to give some of you the history. I guess many of you or some of you weren't not
speak
loud
more
enough.
Into the microphone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry. There we go. I was informed that some of you weren't aware of the history of this project and how it all came together, so I think that's my role tonight, and then I'll let the brains of the bunch take over. I'm going to go way back. January of 21, I got a call from the attorney for mayor and council, Gary Cohen, prior to Jonathan Rothschild. Gary called me, and he asked, and I will... For transparency, Gary's a personal friend of mine. Gary said that the town was struggling and was entering into possible costly litigation because of the homeowners association, Rompson, the Canadian owner and lender on the project that has now closed, and the town. And not to bring me into the project, but to ask for my advice if there was anything I could offer to help guide the town through this. So I said, absolutely, I'm happy to take a look. Then the question was asked, would I be interested in developing the current entitled multifamily section of this project, the larger section? And immediately I said no, because I knew the sentiment in Oro Valley wasn't for multifamily at this time and didn't want to deal with it. So soon after that, Gary Cohen was appointed as a Superior Court judge by Governor Ducey, and he moved on to something else, and Jonathan Rothschild came in. Your town manager at the time, and Jonathan, courted me, brought me in, and said, Ross, here's what we have. Here's what we'd like to do. We need your help to bring all the parties together. There was a combative relationship at the time between the town and Rompson out of Canada. So I explored it. I said, if we're going to do something, I don't want to go through a public process. I don't want to go through a rezoning. And I was told, the beauty of this, Ross, is you won't have to. I shouldn't have to be here tonight. The beauty of this deal, Ross, is it's a settlement agreement. And it's done in executive session. These are their words. So I was convinced to go along with it. Why did they choose me? Why didn't they go out to the greater community? There's a bunch of hack developers like me out there looking at deals, right? They chose me, I think, because they trusted me. They knew whatever I agreed to, I would follow through. I remember Paul Kiesler said there's three developers in this town in the decades he's been, and Paul Kiesler is one of yours, said there's three developers in this town. They might be tough to go through the process with, and there's negotiation that comes with the territory, but there's three developers in this town that if they say they're going to do something, they're going to do it, me being one of them. So I think that's why they brought me in. So here I am with your existing town manager and your attorney for Marin Council. I believe that's what Jonathan Rothschild is or was. And I reached out to the Rompson folks and we started to put this deal together. Everybody had to bring something to the table, money. And they had to do it very quickly. There wasn't any time. There was a race to the finish line, a political race to the finish line. I was not privy as to why, but I played along. There was not any time for me to do the proper due diligence or the civil work that goes along with a project like this. So what did we do? We added things into these agreements, the settlement agreement and the easement agreement, that would provide me with some flexibility along the way because we didn't understand it like I normally would want to. I was told over and over again, Ross, trust us. This is going to work out. At that time, I had the existing entitlements of three stories and 133 units. I didn't need anything more. I didn't need the 1.5 acres. I didn't need the sliver of piece of property that I ended up purchasing. I was fine. It worked. Until the town and the conservation group said, Ross, regardless of what you're approved for right now, regardless of what you're entitled to build right now, we want you to go down in height. So three stories now becomes two stories. Okay, let's talk about that. What happens? If you can't go vertical, you have to go horizontal. So that's what we explored. Their ideas were to move into the easement agreement for certain things as described in the settlement and the easement agreement, and also allow the same descriptions of what's in these agreements to apply in the easement agreement to the sliver piece of property, or people call it the fish piece or whatever it's shaped as. And the language in these agreements are identical. In my opinion, I should be allowed to build apartments in the sliver piece because they're described the same way. They're described as the OV-132 parcel. Getting into this with staff, they said, Ross, we weren't, staff wasn't a party to these negotiations. And in all fairness, that worked out to be a drag for everybody. But they weren't. So staff explained to me that we're not going to support a part, regardless of what the agreement says, and there might be a difference of opinion, but we're not going to support a building built in the sliver piece. But what we will support, put a clubhouse in there and a pool, because that could be considered recreational space. Thought about it, creative, then decided that would put the clubhouse and the pool in the back of house of this project. It doesn't give it any entry statement, any curb appeal, and it's not a project that I wanted to be affiliated with. So then I went back to staff and I said, we've redesigned this entire project in good faith. We have the clubhouse and the pool out front now, and we're not going to build a clubhouse in the open space area, the sliver. We're not going to build apartments in there. We're just going to add some parking and create open space. The response from staff was, you will have our Uber support. Those were the words. So then I thought I was done until this 1.5 came up. I've had a lot of meetings on the 1.5. In fact, in a meeting, and the reason why it was described as approximately 1.5 is because we didn't know. We didn't know how much extra space would be needed for open space and parking and to follow your zoning. So we guessed at 1.5, but we put in the word approximately for a reason. It ended up being a little less than 1.5 plus the drainage basins, which are about 3/10 of an acre each for a combined total of 1.9. But just the parking area is 1.36. So less than the 1.5. Now, what are the basins going to look like? They're going to look a lot nicer than what's out there today because they're going to be newly vegetated, newly landscaped. At that time, when we said approximately 1.5 without any due diligence, without any civil engineering, I would say today, our guess was pretty good. We had no idea at that time, as we are being pushed to close. All the town cared about at that time, and when I say the town, I'm talking about the town manager and the attorney for Marin Council, was getting my money across the finish line. I trusted the process. I still am trying to trust the process, but it's been an unfair and extremely costly process. Again, I remind you, I was invited into this. This wasn't a project that I sought out. So Rory will talk. If there's any questions about the settlement agreement or the easement agreement or the history, I'm happy to answer them. But when it comes to getting into the nuts and bolts of the project, I am not that person. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ross. Are there any questions about the settlement agreement?
We'll address questions once after. Perfect. The public is done.
Perfect. Thank you, Ms. Chair. I do want to stress a couple of things, though. For the 6.1 acres that was already rezoned, through that settlement process, we heard at the neighborhood meeting some concerns about the current town council and what they allowed. I want to stress what was allowed at the time was three stories and 133 units. Town council actually changed the zoning to allow less, mainly the height limit. So there was, through that settlement agreement process, some effect on the zoning, but it was to constrain the zoning somewhat, mostly with those height limits. So with that now, I'd like to kind of turn to really the real reason we're before you all tonight and our three items. And those three items are the rezoning area, the development package, and the architecture plan. So we'll start with the rezoning. Again, it's a small request, 0.7 acres, but based on what Ross had just said, it's really important for the project because without that additional space, we would have seven buildings in a very, very tight area. What the rezoning area does is it allows us to put some parking, some amenity space, a little bit of natural open space, a couple of trash dumpsters for the project, and that takes some of the that frees up some of the space on our 6.1 acres. As he said, if we had three stories, we'd have five buildings. Now that we have two stories, that spreads us out horizontally, and we have seven buildings. So the footprint of those additional buildings takes away space for parking, for open space. We have to have 30% open space. We have strict parking requirements. All of those things take up area. And because we have more buildings, we need more area off of that 6.1. That's why the town had agreed to the approximately 1.5 acres, and that's why we're requesting this. If you're not familiar with Ross's project, he builds Class A apartment complexes. They are the highest level of quality, they drive the highest amount of rents, and to have a Class A project, you've got to have space, you've got to have room for landscaping and for amenities. Without this rezoning area, that would force us to basically cram in buildings and it essentially wouldn't look good. Wouldn't look good for the residents, but it also wouldn't look good for those driving down Vistoso Highlands. So that's really the gist of our request, is to free up, to allow us more space to really make a more quality project overall. This is just a map of what our request is for on the zoning map change, essentially converting from open space to golf rec. The preserve is mostly golf rec. We're essentially making a request to change the open space to that golf rec, like most of the area around it. All right, so let's move on to the development package. So for those of you who aren't familiar with a development package, is a set of civil site plans. They're drawn up by registered civil engineers. They're stamped plans. And what they represent is the horizontal plans of a project, and they show code compliance. So we have to comply with the zoning code, with drainage, with landscaping, with some of the transportation road regulations in some cases. So what these plans show is code conformance with all of those regulations. Now, I'm not going to sit here and go through all of those elements because staff has essentially reviewed these. We've gone back and forth with staff several times, and we're at a point where staff is comfortable that we're code compliant on the project. There's a few small sort of housekeeping things we need to do, mostly labeling. But from a code compliance standpoint, staff is comfortable with our plans. I'll run through a few things, though, just to illustrate code conformance. Our plans show 132 units, which is compliant with the settlement agreement. Shows that all of our buildings are two stories. It represents the access of the building, which has been reviewed by the town for safety, for emergency access. It shows that we have 255 parking spaces, which is 10 more than the code requirement. But for Ross, the operator, parking is essential to making sure that an apartment project operates well. So we're very comfortable that the 255 is more than ample parking. The development package shows recreational amenities for residents, such as the pool, the clubhouse, dog park. But it also shows that we're doing a trail access off of our property to replace the current on-property access. And like we mentioned before, we're agreeable to doing an off-site parking area for the public. It's just west of the project. We've also completed a traffic study. It, too, is completed by a registered engineer. Town has reviewed that and accepted it. And basically what that study shows is that that our traffic, which we will have additional traffic, but that traffic won't affect any of the levels of service of the turn lanes in the area, the intersections, nor the roadway. Like I said, the town has verified that. We are complying with the 30% open space. In fact, we're over that at about 35, 36% open space. And that includes a little bit of natural open space and then the kind of functional open space that's within the property. We also have submitted a landscape plan that staff has reviewed and has accepted. It includes all of the vegetation, the plantings throughout the site. It also includes the screen walls. We essentially have walls throughout most of the property, all through the road frontage, and then throughout most of the south. But it's not a completely closed off project. It's not gated. There are a few areas, especially on the southeast, that are open. One of those the purposes of that opening is there's a trail connection from the apartments to the trail. You see the trail as being a significant amenity for the apartment. I think there'll be people who seek out this apartment just because of that trail access. But that's also an opportunity for if any wildlife gets into the property that they'll have some openings to get out. There's a few openings towards the south where the drainage exits the property as well. The walls along the south and kind of on the east and the west are 5-foot block walls, decorative block walls. And along the roadway, it's going to be kind of a staggered wall system that's more decorative and more more attractive from the road. Our landscape architects here, if you have more specific questions about the plantings, I use this illustration, not our landscape plan diagram, because it's colored, and I think it really shows the amount of landscaping that's going to be throughout this property and really represents a Class A project. Okay, finally, with architecture, we've presented our architectural plans to the town. They review those for both for compliance with the town's design principles and their design standards, and staff has deemed that we have met those. Those principles and standards include things like building articulation, that you just don't have one flat facade, that you've got a lot of variation in the massing, that you have some variation in the roof, in the materials, really that you have an interesting architectural design. These are the elevations. This is kind of the north facade of one of the buildings. This is the south facade. So our architects, I think, have really done a nice job in designing a nice-looking project that meets those standards that are in the town code. As Mr. Spaeth mentioned, we have gone before the Vistoso Community Association's Architectural Review Committee a few times. At the last meeting, they've offered their recommendation for approval. These are the side views. I also wanted to note that in addition to the architectural variations we've had, we're incorporating multiple color schemes. So we've got seven buildings, but we have three different color schemes mixed throughout those buildings. And all of those colors are compliant with the Rancho Vistoso master color palette as well. So kind of to finish up, as Mr. Rolney mentioned, we are agreeable to the conditions that require construction of a parking area, 21 space parking area that it is just west of our site on the preserve, and agreeable obviously to relocating the trail that is in that rezoning area, moving that away. But the agreement to those conditions is conditioned upon us working out, I think that's really probably more appropriate for us to work with mayor and council at the next stage, but working out the specifics about that easement area, where Mr. Rowling said that's an approximately 1.5 acres. We really, for this project to function the way we've got it designed, we need about 1.36 acres for parking and about 0.53 acres for some drainage areas. But those drainage areas are going to be they're not going to include riprap. They're not going to include concrete. They're going to be completely natural with a significant amount of natural vegetation, mostly natural trees, desert trees, that'll be throughout there. And they really serve as kind of a transition from our back wall of our project to the trails on the preserve. And we've spent a lot of time and energy designing that, and we think it's a really good design. So we want to continue to keep working on that, and then obviously we've got a few conditions related to the development package cleanup that we're fine with. So with that, I want to just conclude by saying, our rezoning request is a very minimal request. It's a small request in area. And I think a reasonable request for the use. We're not putting any buildings. We're just using it to really create more space within our overall project and make the overall project better. Our development plan, landscape plan, and architectural plans do meet the code, and in a lot of areas exceed those codes. This is a good design. It really makes for a Class A project. And with that, we would respectfully request you recommend approval, and we're happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you so much. We will have questions for you, I'm sure, after a public hearing. Mm-hmm. All right. Next, we're going to open our public hearing portion of our meeting. I would like to remind speakers that you do have 3 minutes. Also would like to remind the audience to refrain from any clapping or booing. Any disruptors will be asked to leave. And with that, we will have our first speaker as Mr. Chris Westermeyer. I apologize in advance if I butcher your last name. I apologize for that. So after Mr. Westermeyer, we have Ms. Rosa Daly, if you'll be ready to speak next. Please approach the microphone. Please state your name and if you're a resident of Boro Valley.
My name is Chris Westermeyer, and I'm a full-time resident of Oro Valley, and my house backs up to Vistoso Highlands. So I'm affected every single day by the traffic and the noise. The story that you just heard from these two gentlemen, you're going to hear a completely different story from the 70 other plus people. It's not that grand, okay? It's not that grand. So this project was approved by the town of Oro Valley in 2021 without public comment, contrary to Oro Valley processes. The project does not meet the 2016 ratified general plan based on Your Voice, Our Future. Traffic on Vistoso Highlands Drive will increase 54%. That's, I believe, a low number. That's based on the developer studies. Due to this development creating potential safety issues for pedestrians and cyclists in our two-lane meandering dead-end street, The apartment use is not compatible with our established neighborhood. Those pictures of those apartments, I'm sorry, they don't fit in. They don't fit in. The proposed density of the site is double what the current highest density is in our neighborhood. The Gulf Casitas are 10 units per acre. Our single-family homes are 2.1 to 5 units per acre. The apartments proposed to be are 21 units per acre. 21 units per acre. That doesn't fit in. That doesn't match. It just doesn't work. The Rancho Vistoso planned area development states that the town will avoid abrupt changes in density whenever possible in reviewing new developments within established neighborhoods. Proposed density in this situation is pretty abrupt. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. It's pretty abrupt. It's more than double the existing fully built out neighborhood. Thank you for listening and have a good evening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Westermeyer. We have Ms. Rosa Daly, followed by Judy Davis. You're on deck. And please state your name and if you're a Nora Valley resident.
My name is Rosa Daly, and I am an Oro Valley resident. Thank you for letting me speak. I did speak at one of the neighborhood meetings, and I respect the sentiments of everyone who's upset about the apartments. The whole Vistoso situation was very, very upsetting. I want to correct the timeline. It actually started in June of 18, not in 19. So it has been going on a very long time. The subject of tonight's meeting is that sliver of land, because the apartments are not up for discussion. Mr. Rulney can build them because he's entitled, because the property's entitled. The fact that that property was always entitled is not the fault of the people here to not know that. There was no public process when Mr. Wolfswinkle decided to use a parking lot to use a parcel that he could sell as a parking lot. And so that's what grew into what everyone was accustomed to, and now they have to face something that they never thought they'd have to face. So I have an enormous amount of empathy for their situation. But Mr. Rulney did do exactly what he said. He came in because he was asked to, because we were short the money to make this deal work. Without him, there would have been no preserve, no deal, and we would be looking at a much worse situation, because Romspen was looking to rezone quite a bit of this land, and if you're patient enough, you can get almost anything you want if you're a developer. So I'm going to recommend approval, because if you give him the access to that land that he purchased, he can make the project less dense. The architecture was approved by the Vistoso Community Association. That is the only parcel on the 208 acres that is within the HOA, the Vistoso Community Association. I would request that sliver be annexed into the association as well as a condition, because he's using it for refuse, and he may be gone, 10 years from now, he may sell the property, and I would want those residents to have that extra control over the appearance of the property if that is a possibility. So I would point that out. He is building a parking lot for the community and a trailhead. That is not something he, had to offer, but he did offer that in the negotiations, and I'm very happy. I would like to add one more thing. The cart path that he is moving, relocating, that should also be done in a timely manner, because it currently runs through his parking lot and his easement area. So if that can also be addressed as to the timing of when that will be relocated so that there would be no interruption in the operation of the preserve. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Daly. Next, we have Judy Davis, followed by Joseph Bell. You're on deck. And Ms. Davis, if you could please state your name and if you're an Oro Valley resident.
Good evening. My name is Judy Davis, and I am a full-time resident of Oro Valley and directly and adversely affected by this project. I would like to speak tonight about the traffic problem on Vistoso Highlands Drive and beyond. Mr. Rolney's traffic study increases the traffic congestion by 54%, and it's not limited to Vistoso Highlands Drive or the Stone Canyon entrance gate issue that has been brought up in the past, much less Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. The out-of-bounds population density of these apartments affects the path to La Cañada Drive from Vistoso Highlands Drive. And I say that because the existing congestion with the drop-off and dismissal of Innovation Parkway students from Desert Fairways Drive, the increased traffic in Centerpoint Road, much less the residents of Desert Fairways attempting to exit to La Cañada. And this brings us to a safety issue, which I think might occur with an already crowded and dicey turning and driving habits with our roundabout at Moore. And it's all going to wind up there at Moore. And I disagree with Ms. Daly, and I'm upset that the general plan from 2016 was willfully changed to allow for these apartments to be built. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Davis. Next, we'll have Mr. Joseph Bell, followed by Pat Straney. Thank you. Please state.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. My name is Joseph Bell. I am an Oro Valley resident, directly adversely impacted by this project. But as residents, what I wanted to speak to the board tonight about is we're trying very hard to keep up. We're not the experts. We're just residents. We're taxpayers. So we're struggling to digest a lot of the information, a lot of the numbers that we see presented to us and try to make sense of it. For example, even in tonight's agenda that was online, it described the project property as 8.7 acres. If you go online right now to the Oro Valley website, it says that it's 6.76 acres. So even inconsistencies like that, to us as residents, we're like, well, how big is it? How many apartments are allowed to be built if the town presents the numbers in conflicting fashion? For that matter, even the building height, the gentleman here, Mr. Rolney's attorney, his slideshow says that the building is 30 feet tall. I thought there were 32 feet. That was in the presentation as well. The limitation in the pad is 34 either way, so it's maybe a reduction of about that much. So trying to keep up with the numbers, specifically I want to deal with the 132 number. During the first neighborhood meeting, Mr. Rolney, who's here tonight, he said the density started off at 150 units. But then he said 132 is the number we came up with, meaning in the settlement negotiations. But during that same meeting, Mr. Spaeth, who's here, he said the 132 number comes from the golf course settlement agreement. But then Mr. Vella, the town, I believe he's the zoning manager, he sort of corrected that and said, well, no, 133 units were permitted by the 1987 town council decision. So, you know, at this point, we're like, okay, where does that number come from? But what we all agree on is the Rancho Vistoso pad says maximum density for an HDR parcel is 21 units per acre. The acreage of the clubhouse is 6.07. If you multiply 21
by 6.07, that's 127, not 132. So we're at a loss. Where does 132 come from? So would somebody please explain that on the, you know, town staff? Because neither the settlement agreement nor the pad support the calculation of 132. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bell. We have Patrick Straney up, and followed by Teresa Morrow.
Good evening. I appreciate the time to speak to this austere group of P&Z folks. I'm going to, unfortunately, end up repeating a little bit of what you've heard, but I am a Oro Valley resident. I've lived here full time for almost 19 and a half years. I've kind of seen all this stuff over the years, and I'm very familiar with it. I went back and did research when I saw this whole thing unfolding. I mean, by looking at 87s and coming forward, and I looked at the 2016 general plan. I looked at the Rancho Vistoso portion of the pad, and in there, those statements, and I think it's section 1.1, that's not important, you can find it. The construction objectives or development objectives are listed as the town will avoid abrupt changes in density whenever possible in reviewing new developments within established neighborhoods. Why is it then that the proposed project has a density of 21 per acre, the highest density in our direct adjoining properties are the casitas and the condos at roughly 10. The rest of us are at 2.1 to 5. I find that a rather large jump in densities. And that should mean something to a town that spends money and time for your voice, our future. I tend to believe those things. But I believe action more than I do words. This is an abrupt change. It is in an established neighborhood. When it was all set up, there were no houses. That's unfortunate. It's fully built out, and that's what you got to deal with today. So I totally feel that I will be negatively impacted. I live adjacent, and that I am very opposed to this going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Straney. We'll have Teresa Morrow, followed by Christine Moffitt.
Good evening. My name is Teresa Morrow. My husband and I are 22-year full-time
Oro
Valley residents.
If you could speak into the microphone.
Okay. Full-time, 22-year, that are directly and adversely affected by the project. The proposal request contains two parcels with completely different zoning. The developer originally came to the town for zoning relief on the smaller parcel to accommodate a pool and a clubhouse. Now the developer says he needs to rezone and eliminate open space to accommodate refuse collection, parking lots, and a dog park. But the parking lots are in connection with the apartment complex. I have four questions. Number one, where can the public find the exact description of the golf recreation zoning? Number two, everyone agrees that parking lots are not allowed on Oro Valley open space. Can you explain why the town staff believes parking lots for use by adjacent apartments are allowed on a parcel zoned golf recreation? Number three, has the town ever approved a zoning change from open space to golf recreation simply to accommodate parking lots for an apartment complex? Number four, by your calculations, what is the minimum number of parking spots this project needs to comply with all applicable town code? In summary, we the residents depend upon the town council to look out for both resident and community best interest, not a developer's. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Morrow. We'll have Christine Moffitt, followed by Alan Amchi.
Thank you. I'm Christine Moffitt, full-time resident. I am directly and adversely affected by this project. I have four questions related to the Rancho Vistoso pad. Per the pad, what is the maximum number of dwelling units in our neighborhood? After adding 132 dwellings from this project, how many total dwelling units would there be in this neighborhood? And then the public can access the pad on the town website. It shows the last amendment to the pad was in June 2021. It also shows no amendments between February 2008 and March 2020. Is the town website up to date? Is it current? And who is responsible for keeping that website up to date regarding the pad? Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Moffitt. We'll have Alan Amshi, and then Ms. Ancona, do we still have some folks online?
I believe so.
Oh, you're here. Okay, great. All right, so we don't have any questions online. Mr. Amshi, please.
My name is Alan Amici, and I am a local resident on Keystone Springs Drive, just a few blocks away. I'm directly and adversely affected by this project, and I strongly oppose to the rezone. I'll get right to the point. There's no overwhelming need for Oro Valley to rezone additional open space land for this apartment project. During the first neighborhood meeting, Mr. Rolney stated that he could fit 132 apartments onto the original clubhouse parcel. Ms. Morales, representing Mr. Rolney, told us that the project, as she presented it, is what makes financial sense for the developer. The apartments would fit onto the original parcel. Please explain the overwhelming need to rezone and eliminate open space that will be turned into trash receptacles and parking lots for very unwelcome apartment project. And I just wanted to finish with what other people have been saying is it's really a shame that this project was not conceived at some point with a density that matched up with the surrounding areas. We've got some great casita projects, and it would have been received with much more open arms with a good design. And this is what we're at least faced with, and I oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Amici. Sorry for the pronunciation there. All right, next we have Lynette Mock, followed by Karen Stemper.
Thank you. My name is Lynette Mock, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. And I want to tell you that this project will definitely adversely affect my family and where I live and my community. No way should this project have ever gotten off the ground. Casitas is one thing. Apartments, no. But I was told by the developer I can't do casitas because it's not going to make me any money. It's not financially feasible for me. I strongly ask you to not rezone this property. He doesn't deserve any more than what we've already given him. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, we'll ask for decorum. Thank you, Ms. Mock. Ms. Karen Stemper, followed by Sally Hood West.
Good evening. My name is Karen Stemper. I am an Oro Valley resident. On this apartment proposal, it seems that the decision about the placement of these apartments was done without consideration of the current neighborhood residents. Some may say the residents should have been watching what the leaders of Oro Valley were planning. And I would answer this. Most of the time, people should be able to trust their community leaders. They should be able to expect that the leaders would not do them injury or harm. Confidence in this case was certainly misplaced. It seems that our decision makers are very willing to do us great and irreversible harm. Most critically, these apartments will change and damage the current ambiance of our neighborhood. We have many older walkers and bike riders, all of varied ability. We have Splendido at the end of the street. The development would dramatically increase traffic and congestion, obviously to the detriment of all those out for exercise and to the detriment of residents in general going about their daily lives. Another strong objection is the universal feeling that this proposal has moved forward without the kind of open and factual information that the community should have received. It is not up to the residents to discover what our leaders have done. It is up to our leaders to be totally straightforward and honest about changes that would impact their constituents. Meeting when many residents are gone are not helpful. Gratefully, the meeting originally planned 5 days before Christmas was rescheduled. This deal, frankly, seems suspicious, and it does because it seems like a bit of a backroom endeavor. Many Oro Valley leaders are obviously aware of the potential damage and have chosen to proceed anyway. In this case, they have lost their moral compass. This is indeed a moral issue. We appeal to their sense of fairness and justice to abandon this project that will so damage our neighborhood. These leaders need to stand in favor of those they're supposed to represent. We urge them to do what is right and make the moral choice to reject this apartment proposal and the rezoning proposal as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Stemper. Next, we have Sally Hood West, followed by Pat Tebow.
Thank you. My name is Sally Hood West. I live on Keystone Springs in Vistoso Highlands. It is a war zone. We are directly and adversely affected by this project due to the fact of the traffic that we all understand. You've heard many other people talk about it. We have documented this problem carefully through video evidence and email correspondence with Mr. Vila and town engineer Mr. Kessler. Both agree the traffic is a problem. But the town staff made this claim in tonight's meeting agenda online. One of the most frequent discussion topics was existing construction traffic in the area using the Vistoso Highlands Gate, the back gate to enter Stone Canyon. Through the applicant's project has no bearing on this existing situation. The town engineer has worked with adjacent homeowners and associations to address the issue moving forward. The claim that this project has no bearing on the traffic situation is outrageous and insulting to all of the homeowners. Mr. Rooney's own traffic impact statement predicts a 54% increase in average traffic because of his apartment project. I have two questions for all of you. Number one, these apartments would spike traffic and make a bad traffic situation worse. How can you possibly claim that has no bearing on our traffic situation? I know you did the traffic studies, but again, it was at a slow time. Number two, the town told us that starting February 1st, vehicles entering the Stone Canyon Gate on our street will no longer be able to stop, stand, or idle during the hours of 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. Well, it didn't work. There has been no improvement and no observed enforcement. Are you willing to guarantee on the public record that the town will somehow constantly enforce this no stop, stand, or idle as you promise. Yes, you put the signs up. That's not making a difference. I strongly oppose what you're doing and what you stand for. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hood West. We have up next Pat Tebow, followed by Chuck Davis. Mr. Pat Tebow, sorry.
Close enough, thank you. Good evening, my name is Pat Tebow. I'm a resident of Oro Valley and live right off of Vistoso Highlands. One of the reasons that we chose the house that we eventually bought was because it did not abut the street, the Vistoso Highlands, because of the noise. I've experienced this before. We've actually had people now who have sold their property because of the noise, not realizing it was going to be that bad, and people who are trying to sell their properties that are unable to, and the values have gone down. Now, this is as it stands now. In addition to this development, the proposed development here, which has already been highly documented and increasing traffic 54%, the Stone Canyon development has a lot of property left to be developed. And there are people that come out of Stone Canyon like a bat out of Hades coming down that street.
Could you speak into your microphone, Mr. Tebow?
Yes. And now, coming up tonight was something that I thought was pretty much dead, and that is the development, thanks to the developer, of the trailhead parking for 21 spaces. And everything I'd heard, that was kind of a foregone issue. They were going to put it somewhere else. Well, now it's back in there again. And we just have more and more and more traffic and more noise. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tebow. We have up next Chuck Davis, followed by Jeff Halbach.
Good evening. Thank you for letting me speak with you this evening. My name is Chuck Davis. I'm a graduate of the Oro Valley Community Academy and a former HOA president. I've lived here for 18 years. I like living in Oro Valley. I hate this project. It directly and adversely affects me and my family. Our future general plan, which the voters ratified in 2016, is supposed to be the policy of the town of Oro Valley. If you look at that plan, you'll see that this was listed as MDR. The apartment was listed as MDR in 2016. Even in some of the submittals that the developers listed, they also list the property as MDR. So I don't know what takes precedence. But if you ask the citizens how they want to use something and they tell you, and then 8 or 9 years later you change it, how do you ever get any trust? How can you be trusted? It just doesn't make any sense to me. So I guess my real question is, how is it possible to move ahead with this when the 2016 plan says this is medium density residential property? The people that live there, when we first heard about this, casitas, we're going to have townhouses, we were all excited by it. And then we heard about the apartment. And we put 5 years into this property. 5 years we've been living with this. We came to the conclusion that not only was the apartment bad, but the more we learned about it, the less we liked it. It's not a high-quality apartment. It's a middle-market apartment. It fits what the developer does. This property is so beautiful and so wonderful. To put this on it is just an insult to all the people that worked so hard to turn this from a golf course into a trail system. I really encourage you to oppose this. I oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Davis. We have Jeff Halbach, followed by Tim Keeland.
Hi, Jeff Halbach, Oro Valley resident. The planner mentioned earlier that there would be a low-maintenance parking lot for 21 cars. Does low-maintenance mean gravel? Anybody have an answer? Yes?
We'll address it after the public hearing's over.
It would be a nice pile of dust flowing in our yards from that as well. The learned attorney for the project stated that an apartment development was inevitable for this property. I and probably most of the people in this room wrote a check for a donation to help purchase this property. And at the time, we all thought we're going to build more casitas or condos there. Had we known that this was a 132-unit apartment building, I sure as heck wouldn't have written a check, and I doubt a lot of other people would have either. It's been a long time since I was back in my school days taking Planning 101. Never once did I hear in that course or any subsequent planning courses that it was a nice idea to put an apartment complex into an existing single-family residential neighborhood. I'm against the project. I have a certain empathy for the developer. I was a contractor. He came forward and did something, but this is what happens when you make deals in executive session without any public input. I also oppose the rezone. Any open space should stay that way. Earlier, as the meeting started this evening, a young lady had a discussion on a vision for Oro Valley. I doubt that this was in anybody's vision of what we would want to be part of Oro Valley. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Holmach. Next, we have Tim Keeland, followed by Ken Cheney.
Good evening. I'm Tim Keeland. I've been a resident just outside that picture there across from this property for just over 20 years. Been in Oro Valley for just over 27 years. Have loved this community. A lot of what I would have said has already been stated, so I won't restate it, but I want to make a couple clear points from my perspective. The decisions being made tonight, you know, a lot of it's not about the density of that property, but it's clearly an enabler for what everyone has articulated as a very bad deal, okay? And the reason I think it's a bad deal is very simple. As stated multiple times, the general plan in 2016 designated that as medium density. That was for a reason, because it has been developed for so many years to be more fitting for medium density. Now, we've heard ad nauseam the idea that it is zoned high-density residential, okay? Going back to some other comments about the moral imperative of doing what's right, I think that says it all. There's a reason it was in the general plan the way it is. And if it were not for people, say, twisting arms or making backroom deals, we would not be here this evening. I am not against something going there, but it does come across as a little deceptive when even in the agreement for the settlement for the preserve, it specifically states apartments. Yet when the public announcement came out, do you know it did not say apartments? It just said multifamily residence, which was a deceptive thing. This goes back to the trust factor. I put it in your hands, but that's where I stand. I'm against this. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Kuint. We have Ken Cheney, followed by Susan Venturski.
Hello, my name is Ken Cheney, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. In fact, I am the chairman of the board for the Richmond at Vistoso Highlands HOA. And I want to thank you, because I know since I do work as, you know, in a position like you, I understand it's challenging. So thank you for your time. I want to say a few things. A lot of this is replication, and I have some new recommendations to add. Adding a 132 apartment complex amid million-dollar homes, as well as highly valued condos and townhouses, will drastically reduce the value of the existing home and developments. If the OV town staff and planning and zoning and town council approve this project, you are injuring the interest and financial well-being of current residents. I also have experience in multiple states. Noise and crime in apartment communities historically have been greater than homeowner dwellings, further negatively impacting the community. I also look at placing an apartment complex on a dead-end street with no commercial businesses, restaurants, or grocery stores nearby really doesn't make common sense. And that's already been talked about, the pad
Vistoso pad high density change that should not be approved. However, if this development is approved as an apartment over the objections of the residents in this area, as well as common sense, then I request the following to be added to the approval requirements. One, written documentation from OV Town Council that now or in the future, no government-assisted housing will be allowed in the development. And two, written documentation by OV Council that background checks on all lease applicants, lease contract terms required a drug-free and crime-free community, including breach of lease contract and expulsion from development. This is very similar to the other apartment complex that was just recently before this Planning and Zoning Committee. That was part of what they required. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney. We have Susan Vinsky, followed by Gail Seri.
Good evening. Happy to be here. I think you've heard from most of us tonight that we're unhappy about this, and it's primarily because of the second agenda item you addressed tonight, which was the general plan revision. Does this not mean anything? I mean, does the general plan just an exercise that nobody really follows when a new development comes up? Is it something that's just kind of, well, we can go back to the PAD of 1987 when nothing was here and forget what was, you know, ratified in 2016 based on the built-out state, you know, what is the as-built condition of this neighborhood now? And it's MDR, except for the Gulf Casitas, which are 10 per acre. In any event, I know you've heard this over and over, but we'd like to think that the general plan does mean something and that it's important for people to take part in it, and we think it's important for you all to take part in, you know, adhering to it, just to keep the as-built, evolved nature of our neighborhoods that are not in any way what was here in 1987, which was nothing. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ms. Vinsky. We have Gail Seri, followed by Richard Seri.
Hi, my name is Gail Seri, and I live in Oro Valley, and I'll be adversely and negatively impacted by this development. So I urge you to not rezone, I'm going to call it the huge acreage for development. This community has sent a strong message to you guys that it doesn't want this land development. People have worked and raised over $1.8 million to keep a large part of this area as natural as possible. It would be kind of a slap in our faces if you then turned over even more acreage to a developer. You've already granted him additional 1.5 acreage for easements. That's gone far enough. The developer can reduce his number of buildings. You're also demanding the community to make a large number of concessions to accommodate this development and your future plans for the area. We are expected to concede to over 50% increase in traffic, and just even more traffic will come in with this new parking lot, and we're not even talking about the entire build-out of Stone Canyon and what that will bring. We're also expected to concede to having apartments where other areas in Rancho Vistoso have not had to deal with all the issues that apartments will have to bring. We are expected to concede to a density that is, again, not in character with the entire Rancho Vistoso community. And on top of this, you are planning to concede to us to concede to a parking area for the preserves. You've just asked too much of us. Please do not rezone additional acreage for the developer's use. Don't put in a parking lot. And for heaven's sakes, quit asking this community to just keep giving more more stuff for that'll negatively impact us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Seri. We have Richard Seri, followed by Steve Roll.
Hello, Rich Cherry. I'm a resident of Oro Valley on West Parfort Drive. You should vote no on rezoning this latest parcel on the Vistoso Highlands development. You keep bringing up actions we were legally obligated to address or face lawsuits. We have addressed and you have granted all contingent issues dealing with the sale of this land. Now that we have a choice, represent the residents and say no. With how unpopular this development is to the community, I actually don't even know why this latest rezoning issue is being discussed. If the developer wants a certain aesthetic, then they can achieve that by reducing the 132 proposed units. Whatever they want to do in the blue area, they can do in their already granted yellow area. Logic leads me to assume the public parking access, which we're learning about today, which regardless of location must be locked from dusk until dawn, will be to the west of the development, causing even more negative impact to the current residents. I can't believe that people's house is there. Now you're going to put a driveway right in front of their house. You know, I would be livid if I bought that house and all of a sudden now there's a driveway and a parking lot that's going to go there. Okay. I do not want my tax dollars going to maintain a satellite parking lot for the convenience and benefit of this development. If they want a buffer for their units, then they can move their structures further to the east. You are already severely negatively impacting the Vistoso Highlands community. I view the metrics you cited as flawed, if not self-serving. You are turning what should be a bucolic promenade into a freeway. By definition, that's true. You plan to eliminate all stops. There's senior citizens trying to walk their dogs. I tried to cross the street, and literally, it's life-threatening. There was a big buck there the other day, and he just froze. You know, this is supposed to be a nature preserve. Okay. I can't comprehend why traffic is such a non-issue to you, although we're hearing a lot about that tonight. Absconding from any responsibility for noise or safe crossing one side to the other. You never address this. Trying to cross this residential street with 100 vehicles per hour at an unhindered 30 miles per hour is already dangerous, yet you don't address trying to cross it with 150. You need to fulfill your fiduciary responsibility and make this road safe for wildlife and pedestrians. Again, do not carve out even more of the intended, now misnamed, nature preserve for this development. And I have a couple of seconds. Really, what kind of urban planning do you have? I mean, you know, it's so car dependent. Everything, you get in a car and it's crazy. You know, if you want to have local stuff where you don't go half to, some of these intersections are crazy. You go down to First Avenue to turn on the Oracle and you're backed up for like a quarter mile. You really need to get a handle on the development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sherry. We have Steve Roll followed by Don Riger. I apologize for pronouncing that incorrectly.
Greetings. My name is Steve Rell. I am a recent resident of Oro Valley. Bought a house last March. One of the reasons that we liked Oro Valley so much was the golf course area. We weren't here for any of the whatever happened to get it into city hands. But, you know, to us, that area is like a regional park. And most regional parks end up being like on the outskirts of counties. So Oro Valley, I mean, to have that park right in the middle of the town should try, in my opinion, should try and do whatever it can to try and make that park even better. And, you know, the intent of the master plan had to have been that this property would be condos or casitas. I don't think the intent, from my knowledge since I've been here, there aren't any other apartment complexes in Oro Valley. This would be the only one. And I don't think the master plan's intent was that there would be apartments in this part of Oro Valley. I don't know if you have the authority to disapprove the plan, but if you look at that plan, you know, there's 132 apartments. Most people have two cars, so it's 264 cars. There are no garages. Most of the parking is a long ways from those apartments. And I just don't see people carrying groceries and their kids all that distance to get to their apartment. I think it's a bad plan. And the reason they had to draw it that way is because of what they have and, you know, what the land, or, you know, to get it to work. At the last meeting, the developer said, well, if it's not 132 units, it's not money-wise, it doesn't work for me. Well, I don't think that should be a consideration of the city. And I do know that, or I saw just yesterday that the Oro Valley is planning on investing in that park. There's some proposal to invest a couple $100,000 a year for 5 years to make the park better. I think the city should consider that, you know, if it doesn't work for the developer, I mean, you shouldn't help him make it work, that the property should go back up for sale. And the city should probably buy that property and make it part of that regional park that they're building for all of the residents. So I don't approve changing the zoning on that small little whale area. I just don't think the city should help move that the apartment development on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roll. We have Don Rieger.
Rieger,
hey, not bad. All right, and finally, our last speaker will be Heidi Lackey.
Madam Chairman and members of the commission, I'm just reminded, I have to thank you for dealing with this kind of stuff. I know this is a volunteer position, so you're really well paid. You all deserve a percentage raise, right? I didn't intend to speak when I came down here, but I did come down here. I was attended the online neighborhood meeting, and there was some stuff being said in there that I thought was not fair for our public servants, or the mayor and board that were in place during the settlement agreement, in terms of calling a backroom deal and devious action. So I've been in and out of Oro Valley for probably 30 years. I own a property at 755, which is just east of the property. It's a casita. I've owned that now for 15 years. When I moved back from overseas, I decided to live just outside Oro Valley. Sorry, but my kids are in that property now, so I would love for you to pull up that plan of the whole thing, which showed what the plan was when Romson had it versus what we're looking at now. When Romson came in, and basically I can only describe it as a cram down, they let the golf course fail. We had a number of interested developers in the golf course that were trying to make it financially work. A lot of that was dependent on using this, what was known as a high density piece, to get the financial leverage to either make a golf course. And essentially, like I said, Romson crammed down. To me, I didn't think it was in our interest to let a developer who made a bad investment decision cram it down on us and build relatively medium density on all 208 acres, including another retirement home with traffic and everything else that goes with that. So, again, I would say I'm adversely affected by this project because there will be traffic. But I'm adding the back perspective, having been in and out of Oro Valley for many years and seen a lot of infill and stuff like that, that this is a vast improvement over what we faced a few years ago. And between a public partnership with Oro Valley, with a nonprofit, that I'm also one of those who wrote a relatively good-sized check to make that happen, and then to have a developer come in to add that other piece. Everybody look at that $4.2 million that it took to get Romson out of here, and it was a pretty good deal. But it took a number of parties coming together to make that happen. And yes, I don't want an apartment right next to us, but it's in the zoning. If everybody who went into that deal a number of years ago knew it was going to be probably a high density. And I'm not going to get into the details. I let the developer and let the staff manage that. All I can say is when we face that Romson thing, is like we had to put up with Romson because it's going to happen. Well, we went a different route, and I think we came up with a good answer. And unfortunately, our public servants and us, I think we need to live up to our word and accept this, like it or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rieger. And finally, we have Heidi Lackey.
Good evening. Heidi Lackey. I live on Step Rock Canyon, right across. We have been here for 8 years, and we moved here from the D.C. metro area. So you can probably imagine that we love this area because it has less traffic, less noise, less people, less chaos, everything. And we would love to see it continue that way. That being said, we now see apartments coming in front of us, and we're not happy. I understand the position of the two men that were speaking earlier. And Ross, I appreciate that you are here tonight. But I just wanted to point out that because we are across, please note that the comments that were made tonight, this settlement was pushed through quickly and without the knowledge of the community. That's the reason I feel the community is at odds with what is occurring today. We want to know that you are here for us and that you are listening to us. And with OV Path Forward, isn't that what that's all about? And isn't that where we're going in the future? So why can't we start now? And I don't believe the design fits exactly into our community. I don't have the answer, but I do believe there are too many units in consideration to the number of Oro Valley units per acre are less than what is being developed here in general. The Stone Canyon traffic, everybody has spoken about that. To me, it seems like we are being appeased with just now placing signs up on the street and addressing that issue when we've talked about this for years since Stone Canyon started. So, as Sally West said, this is insulting. I would like to see that this board truly considers how this will affect us daily and affect our property values, and that the board come to some understanding and some decision that somehow we can all live with. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lackey. Ms. Ancona, do we have any more blue cards?
No, I haven't received any.
Thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing portion of the agenda item. I have a request for a quick break, so we'll just take a quick 5-minute break, and then we'll resume with commission discussion. We'll be back, at 7:52. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. If you guys could please find your seats, take your seats. Thank you very much. Okay, so I appreciate all of those, all of you who took the time to come out and address the audience, or address the commission. I appreciate you. And if we could please stop the noise, and I appreciate it. We want to keep going. I don't want to keep you guys here too late. So we want to be respectful of your time. So thank you very much. We appreciate that. And again, I appreciate those who addressed the commission today. There were a lot of questions that I heard. So before we go into our discussion as a commission, I would like to address several of those issues and questions that were brought forward by the audience. So I know that we took several of those notes over there with the staff. So we'll go ahead and start with one of the first things that I noted. So I want to talk traffic. That was brought up just about by every single person. So let's go ahead. The number 54% increase was brought up. And so I'd like to know where that number came from and more about traffic. Doesn't seem like it.
It is not currently on.
Hold on, we'll get some tech support. Give me just 1 second here. You say he's
good. We good? Yeah.
Very good.
All right. So, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, that 54% number is accurate, but it doesn't take into consideration the amount of traffic that's currently on Vistoso Highlands. And just a little bit of background. So, and I'm sure you're familiar with this. We have to do a traffic study. It's prepared by a registered civil engineer. The traffic study is stamped. It's not his opinion. It is his it's his professional stamp that's really kind of behind that traffic study. Then that traffic study goes to staff, who has registered engineer that reviews that. Sometimes there's some disagreement, professional disagreement. They go back and they change it. But at the end of the day, the traffic study that we've submitted is one that's been prepared by our civil engineer and has been accepted by the town. So, and it is based on the kind of generally accepted principles in the traffic engineering world, based on something called the an ITE manual. And beyond that, I'm not real familiar with all the details. But what I do know is that it is a carefully, thoughtfully prepared document that's based on engineering principles. So that background, the current traffic count that was done for Vistoso Highlands showed 1,830 average daily trips. That's just throughout the day there were that many trips. What a traffic study looks at are a couple things. One, it looks at how much traffic is going to be on that roadway. But more importantly, usually when traffic's on a road, it's not backed up between the intersections. What's more important is what's the effect on the intersection. So this table that I have in front of you is from our traffic study, and it's got several columns. The one that is right here is the existing, based on when we submitted 2023, the grades for each of the intersection turns. So each turn at an intersection gets a grade. The grade is called a level of service. So LOS is the acronym, but it goes from an A to an F. It's not quite like school grades, because A through C is still good, and then below D is when it gets concerning. But for current right now, if you look up and down that column, almost all of the grades are A. There's a few C's, but almost all of them are A. So that's today's traffic. If you skip over, so what our traffic engineer looks at is in 2 years, or the projected opening of 2024, which is it probably would be 2025, but based on the projected opening year, it looks at what is the traffic going to be with additional background traffic without our project and then with our project. So those are the two columns on the right. I'll guide you to the third column, which is with our project. If you look at all of those grades are essentially the same is what they are today. So what that tells us is, yes, we're going to be increasing traffic, but based on the light amount of traffic today, which I know some people in the audience may not agree that it's light, but based on the study that we did and the counts that we did, that traffic is very low, that there's not going to be a change in the performance of any of those intersections with our project. I also want to point out that this assumes that there was never any traffic here, and that's just not the case. Back in up until 2018-19, when the golf course closed, there was traffic that was there. It wasn't quite as much as what our project is going to generate. Our traffic engineer used the ITE traffic manual to sort of do an estimate of average daily trips. For a golf course, it would be about 526. Our project's 922, so it wasn't the same. But you can't. It's really not fair to assume that there was no traffic at all before. There was a project there. It was a golf course, and it had a pretty decent traffic generation, trip generation, at that time. So, the other thing that I did want to mention is, based on our traffic engineer, they can look at a road and based on the road characteristics, determine a capacity of that road. It's kind of a measurement of how much traffic it can take over a day. That capacity for that roadway is about 10,000 daily trips. And so right now, even with our project, we would be at about 19% capacity. So based on a couple of different statistics, the traffic, our project, it's going to increase traffic, obviously, but it's not going to increase it in a way that's going to have an impact.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, we're not taking questions from the audience. The time is over. So please remember respectful decorum and keep crosstalk to a minimum. Thank you very much. Next, we had a question about the proposed zoning that won the 0.7 acres, mm-hmm. about it being annexed as part of the HOA. Is this not part of the HOA currently, or it is part of the HOA? If you could clarify, please.
So right, Madam Chair, members of the commission, right now the 6.1 acres is part of the HOA. And that's why we had to go to the Vistoso Community Association and their architectural review and go through their architectural review. But this small sliver piece is not part of that, but there'd be no objection to annexing into those CC&Rs. Really, the impact of being in the association is things like architectural review and dues and... with 6.1 acres, we're already subject to annexation or to the review and whatever dues are probably much more for that than they are for this sliver piece. So there's Ms. Rowling doesn't have any objection to that.
And it has been discussed with the HOA board?
This is really kind of the first time we've heard that, but we've talked and there's no issue with, you know, if that's not up to us, that's up to the association. So if that's something that they want, we're agreeable to that.
Okay. The next question was confusion on the numbers. We've heard 8.7, we've heard 6. If you could please explain.
Yeah. I think there's a better exhibit. This one's a little light, but so the rezoning, the rezoning parcel is, I've been saying 0.7, it's 0.69 acres. And the parcel that's zoned HDR, the main parcel with all the buildings, I think it's 0.07, I've been saying 6.1, or 6.07, I've been saying 6.1. But that added with the area for our easement is where the town got the 8.5 figure. So there's no sleight of hand about it. It's just we've got a development parcel, a rezoning parcel that equals about 6.8 acres, and then that 1.5 to 1.9 for the easement area is added to it to get the 8.
Right. So that 8.7 includes the easement, the little parcel, the whale. Rezoning, and then what's already zoned high density, correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. It's all in. It's 8.7. But there's really no reason to for us to try to fake the numbers on it. The development parcel with the buildings is the only parcel that can have buildings. The other parcels are for sort of the ancillary things like parking and drainage and those types of things.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, we had a question about where did 132 come from?
Is that something that town... I wasn't involved at that point, and that was at the time of the settlement agreement. So,
sure, absolutely. Thank you, Chair Clark. So, the speaker's point, there are some conflicting maximum density requirements in the PAD relative to the HDR zoning district. And so... the one that prevails and takes precedent is that in the HDR zoning district, you can have a minimum gross land area per dwelling unit of 2,000 square feet. And so based on that number, using the property size for the HDR piece of 6.06, that's where the 132 units comes from. So that was the origination of it, if you can follow my math.
Okay, thank you very much. And we'll have follow-up questions from the Commission. Okay. Let's see. Another question we had is parking, and this is probably for staff, is a parking lot a use that is congruent with the zoning of golf recreation?
So, Chair Clark, again, so as I stated during my presentation, that is something that we've historically seen been approved as part of the recreation slash golf course zoning district. Again, this site has parking lots and clubhouses and had a driving range that were approved under that zoning district. The Stone Canyon Golf Course has a clubhouse and parking and refuse areas. So, yes, that is something that has historically been approved in this the zoning district.
Thank you. Another question we had was what was the minimum number of parking spots versus what is being proposed in this property?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I sort of briefly mentioned this in the presentation. 255 spaces are provided in our development package. The requirement's 245, so we're 10 over.
10 over, thank you. Another question was about the website. I don't know if anyone can answer that. Who keeps that updated?
Sure, there. Thanks again, Chair Clark. So, so there is one amendment yet that has not been input into the list that is kind of a running list. And that was the one that was just recently approved last December for Oro Valley Marketplace. So the list is current as of that one. Code Publishing is the service that we use who maintains that, and we work hand in hand with them to send those updated code amendments when one is approved. And the last one, we're just waiting on the applicant to get the latest revised language to us, and then we will get it to them, and then it will be current, yes.
Great.
Madam Chair, can I add, when I heard that question, I thought there was maybe that it implied that something should have been updated back in when the settlement agreement was approved in end of 21, 22. And the fact is that the zoning that is on that property wasn't changed by the settlement agreement. What's allowed by the zoning wasn't changed. The settlement agreement actually reduced it to two stories and maybe took a unit off of the total yield, but really reduced it by one story. So there was no need to update the Rancho Viscoso PAD at that time. So I think that's where that question was going to, and if not, then Mr. Space answers more than adequate. But I don't think there was any need to update I know there wasn't any need to update the PAD back when the settlement agreement was approved.
Thank you. So another issue that was brought up several times was medium density versus high density. State said it in the general plan we have now in 2016. This was zoned medium density and rezoned again. If you could speak to that.
So Chair Clark, thanks again. Yep. So a nuance that everyone needs to be made aware of is, right, the general plan when you have your land use designation is really kind of a map of what the town would like to see on any given property in town. In this case, it was medium density residential. What takes precedent is the existing zoning on the property. So the HDR was not changed when MDR was applied to it. And it wasn't even in the 2016 general plan. I think it was in the 2005 or maybe further back when that designation was applied to it. So from a town's practical enforcement perspective, the HDR zoning district is what takes precedent, not the MDR change or designation, excuse me. And so as the applicant just stated, the property has been zoned HDR since it was first annexed and adopted in 1987. So nothing has changed that to date.
Okay, thank you very much. Another question regarding the parking lot that would be going into the trailhead on the town land that's just adjacent to the 0.7 acres. Do we know what kind of material that will be, the lot?
The Madam Chair, members of the Commission, the town requested that it be a DG gravel dust-controlled lot. It'll have wheel stops. It'll have a couple of spaces that are ADA spaces that are fully paved. But for the most part, it'll be a gravel lot.
Thank you.
And about 21 spaces, I think.
Thank you very much. Was there any questions that I missed?
Actually, I do have a couple of them, if you don't mind, Chair. Thank you. So there was a question about the building heights and which building height applied. And so in the development plan package that's a little bit more refined, it shows 30 feet, 6 inches, 7 inches, something like that. On this graphic that you see on the screen that is associated with the develop or the rezoning, it shows 32 feet. So in an effort to be transparent from the town's perspective, we were going to show the higher one rather than do the lower one and find out that it went the other way. So that was the rationale behind having, or the reason behind having, two different building heights shown. I got a question about the number of units in the neighborhood and whether there was adequate or sufficient space to add these. And yes, so this property, as is all the other ones surrounding it, is in Rancho Vistoso neighborhood 11. And so the residential cap in that neighborhood, and when approved, was for a little over 1,200 units, 1,209 to be specific. Currently, there are 866 units, so well in excess of 132 units still remain in that neighborhood for in regard to this approval. I'd note the question about enforcement on the parking and idling on Vistoso Highlands Drive. We can certainly touch base with our police PD folks to certainly have them circle back with that and see if we can get that resolved. So there was a question about a perception that maybe there was a sleight of hand in trying to list multifamily units as opposed to apartments. I can assure you that was not the case. If the Rancho Vistoso PAD HDR zoning district references multifamily units, and so that's why those were reflected on the notice that went out. So I think that summarizes the list. Thank you.
Thank you. And just about the multifamily units, at that time when that was written, was there a possibility that these could have been condos or some other type of multifamily unit?
Chair Clark, certainly. Yes, multifamily is apartments, townhomes, condos, casitas. It could have been anything. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Was there something you wanted to add?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I'll sort of back up Mr. Spaeth. When we're in kind of the development world, when we commonly use multifamily as apartments, it's not something that's an intentional. It's just sort of part of the nomenclature. A lot of the codes list multifamily and not apartments because it could include different attached units. In fact, I think here just to our east, the condos are in that same zoning. That developer just determined at that point to build attached condo units at about 10 rack. They could have gone up, but at that point, that's what the market bared. The fact is, you just can't evaluate this project on its own without incorporating the settlement agreement process, right? Mr. Rolney paid an amount that was needed in the deal, but that amount was for 132 units. You can't fault him for wanting to build 132 units when he was asked to bring $1.7 million to the table based on 132 units. No businessman would now decide, well, I'm going to only build half, because it just doesn't make sense. You can criticize him for wanting to make money, but he was brought to the table to help make the preservation of 202 acres possible based on those facts. So I understand that there's a frustration. People and we do multifamily apartment rezonings throughout the region, throughout Southern Arizona. And we always, there's always an uncomfortableness. We always get a negative reaction to apartments. I don't understand it, because for the first 10 years out of college, I lived in an apartment. Every friend of mine did. Everybody I know has lived in an apartment at one time or another. Doesn't mean that they're.
Please.
Yeah. I mean, this is the reaction we get, because people, it's different, and there's just a negative connotation to it. And it's all over the country. I have I can show you some research articles where academics, because it's so prevalent to have pushback against apartments, there's academic research that shows they've gone in, they've studied it, and it shows that property values are not negatively impacted by new multifamily apartments. There's actually a lot of research that says for affordable products, it doesn't even impact the impact values. We're not talking about affordable here. We're talking about nice new Class A apartments. So I get why there's a concern, and we're asking for a change here, and change is really hard for people. And I emphasize with the folks in this room, but the fact is that these aren't going to negatively impact the value. It is going to be a change, but once they're built, these apartments will work into the fabric of the area. They're going to attract really high quality tenants. They're going to be high quality apartments. And I think they are compatible with the area. So.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Judeman. All right. We're going to open it up to our commissioners. Mr. Zielinski.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank the people that acknowledge that this commission does not get to vote on the current 132 zoning. Mm-hmm. We can neither say yay or nay. It's not in what we've been charged with. That was made very clear in the correspondence sent to us. And so I'm going to confine my comments to the other areas where I can affect change or give an opinion. First of all, in the site analysis or in the architectural plan, I believe that these parking areas in the 0.7 and in the 1.5 have canopies or structures or something like that. With all the research I did, and by the way, I attend or watch all the neighborhood meetings. I probably spent well over 20 hours in the last 2 weeks studying documents and diving into this stuff. So we do pay attention to what's going on. That's disappointing to me because when I read the conservation easement, it says no structures, okay? And I guess Mr. Welch may have approved it, who is the conservation person from Archaeology Southwest, but it's written in there that structures are not permitted. So I don't know if I guess I don't have a vote on that, but that's disappointing to me. Okay. Go ahead if you want.
Is it all right if I?
I have other follow-up questions. But
sure,
this
sure,
one is,
sure. No, it's actually a great point, Madam Chair, Commissioner Zielinski.
Okay.
So the conservation easement was drafted about the same time as the easement agreement that gives. So and that easement agreement clearly states at the end, if there's any conflicts between the easement agreement and the conservation easement, the easement agreement takes precedent, trumps.
Okay, I didn't see that now, in place, but I have to trust you.
Yeah, and I can point it out to you. The funny thing about the conservation easement is it only allows for drainage in that easement area. So the easement agreement that was negotiated by the town, Mr. Rolney, and the conservation fund was a signatory to it. They weren't a party to it, but they signed off on it. They sort of expanded what was allowed in that easement area in that easement document, and that easement document clearly says it takes precedence over the conservation. So it's a great question, but that's the explanation.
Okay. And when you calculate your 36% open space,
mm-hmm.
From what my math I did, that includes the 6 acres plus the 0.7, I believe, to get to the 36%. It does not include the 1.5?
So we did it two ways. If you include the 1.5, then we have a larger denominator, but we're still at like 35%. If you don't include it, then we're at 36%, I think. Yeah. So either way, there's a couple of ways you could have sliced it, but either way, we meet it.
And I guess parking lots are open space, huh?
No.
Well, I have a hard time seeing 2.5 acres in the 8.3 or 8.7 acres of open space. And I've asked the staff, and we've looked around, but I don't see anything that designates how much, where this 2.5 acres out of the 6.7 or the 8-point-something comes from.
Sure. So if on this exhibit, it shows the areas in that light green that are open space that are not part of the 1.5, that all makes up the 2.48 acres of open space. And it doesn't include the pool. It doesn't include the parking lots. But it includes all of the, you know, the intervening landscape areas. And so,
yeah, like I said, there was no way for me to verify that number, but it sure looks to me that if you take away the parking lots and the other areas you mentioned and take that away, it's hard to believe there's 2.5 acres of open space there.
And Chair Clark, if I could just also just add in, Commissioner Zielinski, so town staff also ran that analysis, and it does exceed the 30% requirement for the HDR zoning district.
Okay.
Not including the parking lots, right?
Just the landscaped areas and the recreation areas.
Okay, I think my last point refers to the 0.7 acres or the so-called whale. There's been talk around, and it's floated, that people say, oh, well, the rest of the 202 acres is zoned golf recreation. This should be golf recreation and, you know, et cetera. I want to point out that the open space, there's at least four buffer zones of open space around the golf course or the former golf course area. That's one reason I think that this should remain open space, not golf and recreation. And why do I say that? Because while parking and other things are allowed on the golf recreation zoning, that's if you've got 200 acres. If you've got 200 acres and you put 0.7 acres of it to be a parking lot, essentially, that's 1%. Here you're going to take a 0.7 parcel and make like 70 or 80% of it structures, refuse, parking. And that's why I don't see golf recreation as the same zoning as open space in this instance.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Commissioner Zielinski, I understand the math exercise. Again, I think I go back to, but for Mr. Rowley's involvement in preserving and helping preserve the 202 acres, right? I mean, we are asking for a rezoning of 0.7, but I think, again, it's got to be taken in the context of the entire deal and the preservation of that 202 open space. So I think you're getting a lot more with converting a little bit of open space. I mean, you've got to take in consideration the 202 acres.
Let me also say something.
Yeah, sure.
With regard to the 0.7, I'd like to believe that the agreements do mean something. So if you look at the agreements and you read the agreements, the 0.7 is defined no different than the 6-point-whatever. And in that, it reads, TCF further agrees that said conservation shall be used for the golf course parcels for parking, drainage, and other infrastructure uses adjacent to or near the clubhouse parcel. It is described no different.
Isn't that the 1.5, though, not the 0.7?
It's both, because if you look on the easement agreement under B, and I'm happy to pass this up to you so you could read it, it describes both parcels the same way. The point set, and it's referring to the 0.7, not the 1.5. 1.5 is separate. It's referring to the 6 acres, and the 0.7 describes them the same way. And the definition is repeated over and over again in the agreement. And I'm happy to pass this up as an exhibit.
If you take it to our recording secretary, Ms. Ancona, and she'll bring it over.
And that's who.
Okay, thank you. I think that covers the questions I'm allowed to talk about.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions from the commission? Yes. I got to learn your guys' last names. So Ms. Wilson, Commissioner Wilson, please.
Thank you. I have three questions for you. Try to keep them short. The first is, given that the 132 apartments could be positioned on the original site, what are the advantages to the project by adding the sliver?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Madam Chair, Commissioner Wilson. So I think the advantage is that if we don't have this sliver, we have to essentially cram parking, we've got a couple of trash enclosures onto the main parcel. And so what the sliver parcel does, it allows us to sort of free up some space throughout our project. Now, that's a benefit to the residents because instead of having buildings crammed together, you've got more internal open space, which translates into more landscaping. It translates into more sort of on-site drainage. There's a lot of benefits to having some internal space there. But I think even for the people around it, having an apartment complex that has buildings jammed together just doesn't look good. So a lot of the benefits are aesthetics, and I'm sure people disagree with that or don't care what the spacing is. But the reality is, if you've got a well-planned out complex that has spacing, that spacing allows for more landscaping, which benefits the surrounding area and the residents as well. So it's a lot of it's aesthetic. But again, it goes back to the settlement agreement. If we had three stories, we'd have a lot more space and wouldn't need that sliver. We don't have three stories, we have two, and so we need the additional space.
And the additional space doesn't allow for a higher density. There were costs involved in acquiring the additional space. There will be 132 apartments built on this property. It's a question of how nice do we want to make them? And I heard some comments from the audience. We don't want low income. So in order to make this as nice as we can make it as a community, there are certain things that we put into place. Usually when a developer extends beyond the property lines and acquires additional land, it's really for only one purpose: to get more units, higher density. We are making this additional expense. I have made this additional expense just to create a nicer product and a nicer atmosphere. No other reason.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson, continue. Sorry, question number two. Mm-hmm. I may be getting in the weeds here, but at the neighborhood meetings, the height of the buildings were said over and over again at 30 feet. In fact, it was presented as a benefit because you could go to 34 feet, but you would stay at 30 feet. Now comes the drawings, and they're at 32 feet, mm-hmm. Actually 30 feet, 11 inches, I believe, up to the parapet over the for the mm-hmm. HVAC. Can you explain the difference? Because I think you might have heard that some of the community, some of the neighborhood, are confused by differing numbers.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Commissioner Wilson, I know that in some of our materials we do have differing numbers, and that's on us. Our architectural plans that were submitted at the time of the neighborhood meeting and that were submitted to Rancho Vistoso, those have said the 30, 10 inches, they're here. That is our architect's height of the building. So it's, what does that say? 30 feet, 10 inches. We've stated it at 32. We've stated it at 30, but based on these architectural plans, that's the height of the building. Is that correct?
It is, and actually those are only the three towers.
Please come to the microphone.
Yeah.
Those are only the 30 foot 10 inches height, which is the maximum height in the project, is only on the three towers. The remaining height's actually probably a couple feet lower than that. I don't know the exact dimension. Maybe 29 feet 6 inches or somewhere around there. So overall height's actually, if you average it, it's going to be even under the 30 feet dimension.
And are those to hide the HVAC? Is that the purpose of those?
Yes, we are. Otherwise, we are going to go a parapet. So actually, this kind of an architecture, it kind of helps because we need to build that slope back in. The other portion that I want to emphasize there, the heights are a little higher when we went back to HOA, the dimensions changed along the way. So we had a multiple meetings with HOA meetings, and in those meetings, actually, the height was a little higher.
And we've dropped it since.
Exactly.
Then. Yeah. So just to be clear, the three architectural features are the maximum, the highest points, and they're the 3011. We're not hiding the HVAC in those, so, right? Yeah, yeah. So right here is that's where it's concealed. So that was, I just put my finger over what I was trying to show, but.
You can see it in the other drawing there.
Right there.
Okay, last question from
me.
Sure,
no problem.
Several of the buildings, most notably number 2 and number 3, are a long way from the parking spaces. Mm-hmm. And this could prove difficult, I think, for some of the residents, especially if it was me coming home from Costco. And I'm wondering, have you thought about a different parking plan?
Yeah, it's not perfect. And there's a lot going on the site. And that's why we extended some of the areas, and that was factored and negotiated into the deal. But right now, the center parking area will support the front row of buildings on Vistoso Boulevard, and it's the middle and the back that'll support the south and the middle two buildings. That's how... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Wait, what do you mean by the front row? Is that the ones...
The ones on Vistoso Boulevard will benefit from the first loop of parking. I don't know
so
how to
this
do this.
Parking here will be for those...
Right, buildings. Right.
This parking and this parking will be for these, and then... probably a little bit of both for those, right?
Yeah. But listen, if I had the freedom to design whatever I wanted, you know, it would be different. And this is, you know, after trial and error multiple times, this is the best that we were able to come up with.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Sure.
Commissioner Nichols?
Yes, thank you, Chair Clark. I have a question for town staff. Mr. Rolney has commented that at the time of the purchase, there was some understanding that this 0.7 acres we're talking about was zoned the same or was treated the same in some way. Can we comment on that?
Sure. Chair Clark, Commissioner Nichols. So, again, as Mr. Rolney pointed out, town staff was not in the meetings when these things were put together and the contracts were made. So, whatever is specified in the contracts does not necessarily correlate with the zoning, which is why we're here this evening, right? And there was some discussion about whether the rezoning was even needed for that little piece per Mr. Roney's understanding of those contracts. And, you know, town staff's position was that you can't do contract zoning. That's illegal. So we need to go through the public process and have a recommendation from commission and a vote from town council to formally rezone that so that it can be treated and the uses that they want in there are permitted. Because the contract, the settlement agreement, did not change the uses that were from a legal perspective, and Mr. Andrews can certainly chime in too, didn't change the allowed uses in that little sliver. So hence the reason here having a public hearing this evening.
Right. So what I'm struggling with is Mr. Rooney came forward, helped the town and, you know, preserve that area that we all benefit from now. I also live very close to this. And the question is, in my mind, is how do we be fair to him, but take into consideration all of the comments that we've heard here, plus all of the letters that we received, the vast majority were opposed, right? We did receive some that were in favor. So I just want to make sure we understand what was the agreement, I guess, at the time of the sale.
I have a great idea. Let's get rid of the 1.5. Let's get rid of the fish or the whale or whatever we're going to call it. I'll build my three-story product, which I was originally entitled to, and we'll go from there. I mean, I made these concessions because of the town, because of the conservation easement. I'd like to believe I get something in return for that, at least following the agreement or the intent of the agreement.
That's not an option. So we're here in this process. I know that's what Ross wants. But the fact is, I think this exact, your exact question sort of runs counter to some of the sentiment that there were backroom deals and that there were things that were shady about this. That is the furthest thing from the truth. And I've come in late and looked at this. Everything that I've seen is the town council who, look, I represent developers, and we're all not in agreement with town council a lot, but here they did right by the town. They reduced to Ross's point, they reduced from three stories to two stories. They protected the conservation easement. They protected the interest of the town in a situation where they don't have any options. The HDR is going to have multifamily built on it, right? That they can't legally change that. I'm happy to explain that legal concept, but they can absolutely not legally change somebody's zoning without their permission. And nobody is going to give permission to get rid of very valuable multifamily zoned land. What the town can't do is they can't contract zone. The town couldn't enter a contract and say, yeah, that 0.7, I know that it's open space, but we're going to let you build this on there, and we're just going to approve it. They can't do that, and they didn't do that. They're making us go through a process, much to the chagrin of Ross, to get this approved. And he didn't expect this process, and this is not what he expected, but we're going through it because that's what the town requires. And so we're here, and we're requesting it, and we're requesting a very, I think, a reasonable request. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Commissioner Nichols. Do we have any other questions? Please. Commissioner Thomas.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I've got one question for Mr. Roney's team, and then a couple questions are actions for staff. Going back to the broader context to the project, assuming the project was approved, what would you expect the overall timeline would be for the impact for construction for the residents and for the area? How long would we expect to be impacted by construction timeline?
I'd like to think that we would have been finished by now, but I think from start, or certainly the pouring of pads, going vertical from there wouldn't take any more than 18 months.
Great. Thank you, sir. Also, I'd like to return this to Mr. Now for staff, Mr. Spieth. Quick question about the parking lot that's for the adjacent area and access to the trail area. Would that parking lot area be controlled access in the evening and gated off to prevent evening access or unapproved access to that at night?
So, Chair Clark, Commissioner Thomas, so that, and I speak for the Parks and Rec Director here, but I presume as a park and rec facility would be under the same rules all town parks are, that they're closed from dawn to dusk. So I don't think that there would be a gate there. It would just be that the town ordinance is that the park is closed from dawn to dusk. So I hope that answers your question.
That's fine. Thank you. And then one question for you regarding the condo units, which are immediately adjacent to the east. Relative height-wise, are they comparable? I think those are roughly in the same 30-foot height as being proposed for this project, correct?
Chair Clark, Commissioner Thomas, that is correct. Those are maximum 30-foot, yes.
Great. Thank you very much. And then my final statement or action is we heard several people talking tonight about traffic and speed, safety issues on the street. I'd like to recommend for staff to consider addressing the speed issue with OVPD, maybe some speed enforcement in the area to control those issues. So with that, I'll close my remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Thomas. Do we have any other questions from the commission? All right. I do have a couple of other questions for you. So this easement, it does take out a significant piece of the cart path that's there now. So it's been expressed to me from those in the public about the new cart path, and we want to make sure that it does connect and replace. So if you could go over where that mm-hmm. new path would be.
That is in, that's on the south there?
Yeah. It's right here on the map. Yeah, I just want to make sure it's pointed out.
Oh.
Are we talking about the cart path or the trailhead?
The cart path.
So the cart path now I think runs through here. This is the this right here.
If you could speak into the microphone.
Sorry.
Is that what you're doing?
The new proposed cart path is here. I think there is kind of a rock outcropping in this area, so that'll have to be worked out. But generally, the area will be right through there.
Sure. And would a condition that we know there's a condition coming up that the parking lot be built first before any building permits for the trailhead, right, is going to happen before building uh-huh. permits. Would you be willing to do this also? Because it will really disrupt a lot of us that use this cart path.
For the record, I don't think that's fair. I'm willing to build the parking lot, don't want to, but to have it tied where building permits aren't available to me until the parking lot is built doesn't make sense, because the efficiencies of my construction and the costs are to build the parking lot simultaneous. At the same time, I have contractors out there building everything else. I would rather have it tied to C of O or something, but not a building permit, because I'm not going to have construction out there staged. But hold back C of O until the parking lot is finished so that I could build the parking lot and the apartments at the same time. I think that's more reasonable. And there was another question, I think.
Well, just the same condition for the cart path as well. So the conditions that we are going to approve or disapprove, if approved,
yeah.
Those in attachment one here, it says prior to building permit issuance, all components of the trailhead shall be constructed on the adjacent Vistoso Nature Preserve.
Yeah.
Must include 21 parking space, and I'm sure yeah. you know what the rest yeah. says, yeah. but I would also like to tack on this cart path as well.
And I have no problem with that, but can we tie it to C of O and not building permits? Because I don't want to construct this stuff while I'm not out there building this project. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so.
Understood. Mr. Spaeth?
Sure. So, and I was under the impression that the applicant's group was okay with that condition as proposed. So if they're not, that's news to me. But the idea was that once construction starts and the existing parking lot is demoed, I can certainly appreciate the economy of scale of having your workforce already mobilized. When that parking lot is gone, folks who are currently using it won't have anywhere to go and park. So inevitably, they're going to park on Vistoso Highlands Drive, or they're going to park in neighborhoods that aren't gated, which we're trying to avoid by tying that to building permits so that the trailhead is open when the other one is closed.
Well, then maybe do it within the first 90 days, so at least I'm out there staged with people. I mean, the other thing is, I'm not trying to avoid it. I'm just trying not to add extra cost as we keep doing. The reason why the existing parking lot out there, it remains out there, is another additional cost. That was to be demoed during the demo of the buildings while I had people out there staged to do so. I was asked by the town and Parks and Rec, Ross, hold off at the expense of you and leave that for our use. And so I'm trying to accommodate the town every step of the way, but there has to be some.
And to make clear, I think the issue is he doesn't want to have all of his grading equipment out there for the parking lot, and then it all goes away and then comes back for the grading at the site, because that's significant expense in addition to what he's already expended. So I think the idea about within 90 days is, I mean, that allow you to have the grading out there, equipment out there, and do the parking lot and the site all at the same time.
Oh, and just to be clear, I don't think that condition, well, not I think,
I know that condition isn't tied to a grading permit, so your grading crew can be out there doing site work. It's just that it's tied to the issuance of an actual building permit for the building.
Listen, you want me to do it that way, I'll do it that way. I don't know what to say. Yes, 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 and yes.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson. Question answered. Okay, very good. Mr. Zielinski.
Well, we sort of went back and forth between the
get you to your mic, Mr. Zielinski.
Between the sidewalk and the parking, let's go back to that sidewalk. If we cut that off and don't put it in for 90 days, or that whole section is shut off from being a loop. And I would think that that would have to be done when you start doing the drainage for the 1.5.
The grading for the 1.5? Yeah. Let me just...
Yes. Sure. We'll put it in as a...
As a condition, as I read before.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Do we have any other comments from any other commissioners? Okay. So this item, as we vote, does require three separate motions, depending on how the first motion goes. And so... I would like to request commissioners briefly articulate the reason for their vote when appropriate, and all we'll ask during the vote. Do we have a motion?
Chair Clark, this is Commissioner Thomas. I move that we recommend conditional approval as discussed this evening, subject to the conditions listed and agreed tonight for item A of the proposed rezoning form of the open space to recreation golf course based on a finding the request is in conformance with the general plan and Rancho Vistoso pad.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
And for discussion, I'd like to open it for discussion. We do need to add the conditions as did you state that in your motion about the conditions?
Yeah, we had so many tonight that we talked through that I didn't have a full list, but I spoke to the fact that it was as agreed to this evening. I'm hoping somebody captured everything that was just discussed this evening. So, okay.
Chair Clark, you can make what is called a friendly amendment under the rules adopted by Mayor and Council, and if that is accepted by the maker and second of the motion, it'll become part of the original motion.
Very good. Okay, so I would like to make the amendment to... item A, rezoning conditions. So prior to building permit issuance, all components of the trailhead and the cart path to make that connection be constructed on the adjacent Vistoso Trails Natural Preserve. It must include 21 spaces on a decomposed granite or similar surface, a paved connection route to Vistoso Highlands Drive, ADA paved parking spaces, and ADA compliant path to the existing trails within the preserve. Final design installation and inspections shall be subject to Parks and Recreation Director, Town Engineer, and Planning approval. Do you accept that? Do you accept that amendment?
Yes, please.
Does the person who seconded that also accept it?
Second.
So that is now the motion you're voting on, including the amendment as proposed and entered by Chair Clark.
As amended, yes, to include the cart path. All right. All those in favor, Ms. Ancona, if we could have a roll call vote, please. And if you'd like to explain your vote, please feel free to do so. We wanted to have a roll call vote, and if the commissioners would like to explain their vote, please do so.
Commissioner Keller?
Explain your vote and explain why and that's your vote.
Well, I'm in favor of everything that's been discussed tonight.
Yeah.
With the...
Please speak into your microphone, Mr. Keller.
I guess I'm in favor of the proposals because...
Well, we need an A and an explanation, sir. I'm sorry. Or a nay and explanation.
I think the developer has tried very hard to accommodate everyone in this project.
Commissioner Nichols?
I'm a nay. I don't think this annexation is in conformance with the general plan.
Commissioner Thomas?
I'm an A, and I'd like to thank everybody who is here tonight for your time and efforts and your opinions, and that includes Mr. Roney and his team. I know you've been very accommodating and very supportive of our questions. So thanks to everybody, and once again, I vote yes or A.
Commissioner Wilson?
I vote A. Given the fact that the 132 units are going to be built regardless, I think that giving it some extra space will make it a better project. And I appreciate and have listened to everyone's input. Thank you.
Commissioner Zielinski?
I vote nay. My reasoning is that while I appreciate the need for the parking and the help the developer was going to give us to build that parking, I appreciate the cart path being moved, which I still think has to be moved. I do not think that we should, I don't think that this fits the rezoning to golf course recreation, because as I stated earlier, if you've got 200 acres and you use 1% of it for parking, that's different than taking 0.7 acres and using most of it for parking. So I'm a nay.
Vice Chair Outlaw Ryan?
I'm a yes. I find the proposal to be in conformance with the general plan and Rancho Vistoso PAD.
And Chair Clark?
I vote aye. And a big reason why is because the apartments are going to be built regardless of what happens here tonight. And having this extra space does mean for a nicer community within this neighborhood to make sure that these aren't three stories, because those entitlements, he could do it. We could do that. And so this really makes it so it is in compliance with Oro Valley and with the PAD.
Okay, motion passes 5-2.
All right, thank you very much, Ms. Ancona. Please, let's go ahead on to our next agenda item.
We have two more votes on this one, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, we have two more.
We have a development plan and architecture.
We have two more. I'm sorry. We have two more votes. Maybe we ought to have just a two-minute recess here. All right, we'll just recess for 2 minutes while those who are leaving we won't be disruptive. Okay, we're going to go ahead and continue our agenda item number 3. So if you guys will please find your seats or exit if you are going to be done attending our meeting. Let's go ahead and move on to item B. We do have two more items that we do need to approve. So do we have a motion for item B?
Chair, I move to recommend a conditional approval subject to the conditions listed in attachment 1, item B of the proposed development and landscape plans based on a finding the requests are in conformance with the Rancho Vistoso PAD and all applicable zoning code.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Chair, you don't mind. So if you'll recall, staff was asking to have that condition stricken if you choose to include it.
I'll go ahead and add that amendment. If we can strike the second condition from item B about the structures, not including required screen wall. And Mr. Zielinski and Ms. Outlaw Ryan, you'll approve that?
Approved.
Approved.
Thank you. So we're voting on item B. And we've been moved with conditional approval with the conditions of having item number 2 removed. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
All right. Motion carries 6-1. All right. And finally, our item C on architecture. Do we have a motion?
I'll give the motion on this one.
I move to recommend approval of the proposed architecture based on a finding that the request is in conformance with the Rancho Vistoso pad and all applicable zoning code requirements.
Thank you.
I will second that.
All right. Do we have any discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right. Motion carries 7-0. Now we may move on to item number 4.
Discussion regarding the town's growth and remaining land.
All right, Ms. Sims, please.
Thank you, Chair, Commissioners. Again, my name is Melanie Sims. I'm our principal planner with the town of Oro Valley. The purpose of this item is to discuss town growth and remaining land. So as of January 2024, only 12% of Oro Valley's land is remaining, half of which is awaiting construction. And it has either an approved...
I'm sorry, Ms. Sims, just a moment. Yeah, if you guys could take your conversation outside, please. Thank you very much. Please continue, Ms. Sims.
So half of that 12% is awaiting construction. It has either an approved plat or development plan. But the other half is vacant with no approved plans. And what this means are... This means is we're really in the refinement phase land use wise within the town, and the town must be strategic with how it wants to use that remaining land. Now, this analysis is done annually to project town revenues and the balance between water supply and demand, but this year it is even more important as the community begins planning the next 10 years through OV's path forward. The information that is being presented to the commission tonight will also be available on ovpathforward.com. And we are asking the community to have this discussion as well in terms of what is the best use of the remaining land. As I go through my presentation, a couple key considerations to keep in mind include evaluating viability of the remaining amount of commercially zoned land as it relates to the density needed to support it, opportunities to have mixed-use areas to live, work, and shop, or diverse housing options, and conserving areas for employment. Now, when looking at how land has been used historically, it is clear that balancing open space and development has always been valued in Oro Valley. 58% of the land is developed with roads or buildings, and 30% is open space. Now, this open space number does include parks, HOA, common areas, and private parks, as well as landscaped areas or natural desert. Again, only 12% of the land remains vacant, and half of this has an approved plat or development plan. Most of this land is large lot custom homes in the Stone Canyon area, which is up north, or even the Law Reserve area to the east. And so those do have slow absorption rates. Typically, that's why that is what is left. Of the 6% that has no approved plan, I'll go through that a little bit more in detail later. But a common misconception that we have heard as we've been out in the community for OV Path Forward is that there's a lot of growth and development left. And the community can expect that growth and development is going to significantly slow down within the next 5 to 10 years. But I do want to make it clear that construction doesn't stop once we hit build out. What we can expect to see is more of redevelopment projects. So an example, a recent example of a redevelopment project is where the Cold Bears and Cheeseburgers is and the Snooze that used to be office space in a gym, if you're not familiar. Looking again at how we've developed historically, housing has always been the driver. 83% of the built environment in Oro Valley is housing, most of which is either single-family residential homes or your standard apartment-type units. So I just want to take a closer look at our history with single-family residential. Over 1,000 permits were issued a year back in the 90s and early 2000s. Now, this is when much of Rancho Vistoso, which is primarily the area north of Tangerine, was being built. Interestingly, though, is that Rancho Vistoso actually has way less residential units than was originally planned. And again, I'll touch on that in a moment. But as with most of the nation during the recession, our permits almost halted and went to as low as 47 per year. And just for context, right now we currently issue about 100 to 200 single-family residential permits a year. But that number is still expected to significantly reduce within the next 5 to 10 years. So without annexations or rezonings, there are less than 3,000 residential units remaining. And again, just like we've historically developed, most of these are your single-family homes or your typical apartment-style units. There are no more large subdivisions, and we look at large as a 300-unit-plus subdivision left in Oro Valley. In fact, the last big subdivision is currently being built right now, and it's Tranquilla at Rancho Vistoso. It's currently under construction, and when it's completed, we'll have 227 units. Most of what's left are those large lot sites. And when we look at multifamily, it is mostly your apartment styles. Those are at the Arroyo Valley Marketplace, Westward Look. There's also a site on La Cholla and Lambert that's approved for units, as well as even the one you just discussed this evening. Now, the Oro Valley Housing Study, which some of you discussed in November, did identify a need for low-rise, higher-density housing products. This is often referred to as the missing middle housing, and it includes townhomes, duplexes, triplexes, things of that nature. And having a range of diverse housing options was valued by community members back in 2016 and is included in the Your Voice, Our Future General Plan. But again, as we start planning for the next 10 years, we're asking the community right now to go on ovpathforward.com and let us know what their vision and values are for housing as we go forward. So looking at just Rancho Vistoso, it was originally planned for a little less than 14,000 units. However, today, only a little over 9,000 will actually be built. This includes what has been built to date, but also what is remaining, and that's based on approved plans or existing zoning allowances. This includes the Oro Valley Marketplace, Stone Canyon area, and there are a few other smaller parcels. What this results in is that there's less people expected to support the amount of infrastructure, such as roadways and parks, and the commercially zoned areas that were planned back in 1987. Evaluating the viability and balance between vacant commercial areas and residential density is important to Oro Valley's future. Roughly 14% of the vacant land is zoned for commercial, office, or mixed use. And staff estimates that this can support roughly 1.7 million square feet of buildings. Site selectors often look at people, traffic, and income when they're deciding to locate in an area. So with roughly 3,000 residential units remaining, it is unlikely that this amount of commercial will be economically feasible. Lastly, 9% of the vacant land is zoned tech park. This is Oro Valley's primary district for employment uses, such as research and development. It is important that these areas are conserved, and they're mostly located in Innovation Park, just north of Tangerine. And there's also the Foothills Business Park, which is on the east side of Oracle Road. So just to summarize, the town has limited land remaining, 12% in total, but 6% of that is spoken for, if you will. And so we really need to be strategic about how the remaining land is used, especially if the community wants to strive to be more self-sufficient with options to live, work, shop, and dine within town limits. And again, we're starting to have this conversation in the community right now, so I encourage everyone to go to ovpathforward.com. They can join the over 1,700 comments, 71% of which were from residents. we really need everybody's input and participation. There is also the survey online, which actually has a specific question about what types of land uses the town should focus on. This concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Malini. You know, I just a comment. I wish all those folks that were here would have heard you about the Rancho Vistoso numbers. That would have been very valuable information. Okay, I digress. Mr. Zielinski, please.
Yes. Where would 4,000 or plus homes go in Rancho Vistoso? It doesn't seem like there's that much land that wasn't built on. It doesn't seem like there's very many large lots. How did they plan for as many as they did?
So, Chair Clark, Commissioner Zielinski, so do you know where Splendido is? Okay, so all along that area, it's actually zoned high-density residential. So they just planned higher density, and a lot of the what was built just built to a lower density because they could, yeah.
Then you showed numbers on high-density residential. Does this include the units already planned for Marketplace or not yet? That's part of this number?
Correct. So, Chair Clark, Commissioner Zielinski, the apartment units you see right there, that includes what was approved for Marketplace, what's been approved for Westward Look, and then there's a handful of other little properties.
It does include them. So when there's 1,600 here, it's 1,600 plus that 700 over there or less
that? 1,600. The 500 is included in the 1,600.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And then the last point is, I don't know that it's really a question. First of all, you've done a good job over the short time I've been working with the group to, by osmosis, I've sort of absorbed most of these numbers. But one question I have is, before I was on this, I did a lot of social media stuff, and you see a lot of people worrying about the budgets. And I think certainly the town council, I'm sure, has a handle on this, but somehow in the public, the word has to get out that the building phase is over. The fees coming in for residential building are over. So we have to accept that and, you know, work within this.
Sure. And Chair Clark, Commissioner, if I can just add to that, the town actually recently finished a study about how residential build-out will impact town finances. It was linked to your report in the fiscal impact section, but it was also presented to the Budget and Finance Commission recently. So I can
find
that. Yeah, someplace. You can watch the video on
okay,
there.
Okay, thank
yeah.
you very much. I'm mm-hmm. sorry I missed.
Thank you. Commissioner Nichols.
Thank you, Chair Clark. Ms. Sims, we've been struggling on the commission here the past few months with rezoning requests like the one we had today. And at least one of the letters we got was from a business person here in town who said, hey, we need more apartments. We need places for our people to live. The question is, how do we do that, right? The planning guidance is, you know, sort of scale from commercial to high density to low density, right? We had a case like that a few months ago where it seemed like it was going to work. It really didn't work out, right, eventually. The one tonight was sort of the opposite of that. It's kind of plunked right in the middle of low density, and there's no commercial around it, right? So the question is, how do we look at those commercial areas? Because we can't rezone them, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody has to purchase them and request rezoning. Mm-hmm. And so what does the general plan help us do with that, I guess, is the question.
So Chair Clark, Commissioner Nichols, that also dives into the land use map. So as referred to with the last case, the land use map really does show the vision for different areas. And we do work with committees of residents to try to look at that land use map and see where are areas that maybe there is commercial's not viable. So the land use map doesn't change the zoning, the legal entitlements, so we can make changes to the land use map. Now, we do include the property owners to make sure they're okay with those changes if they want to make them. But that is one way to guide where the community wants to go and where areas for residential may be more viable than the commercial. Also, with the general plan, there's goals and policies. And the policies directly relate to actions that are actually implemented. So a lot of the code amendments, for instance, that the commission considers and reviews, they stem from a general plan goal or policy or action that has then been prioritized either through a strategic plan or by the community to then come to fruition. So that's another way is to look at even our zoning and the types of housing we allow in our zoning. But again, we're still at the very beginning to see if the community wants to go that way. But that is some ways that the general plan can help guide the housing choices.
So are you saying the general plan would actually take a crack at identifying some commercial and saying, no, this really should be multifamily or high-density residential or something, and color it that way on the map, even though the zoning didn't match?
Correct. So that is where the community will help kind of lend their voice to what uses should go where to make the community more self-sufficient. And that's where you get the land uses don't always match the zoning, but it's at least a vision for the future of where employment, commercial, residential should be in the community.
Thanks.
Commissioner Thomas.
Excuse me. Thank you, Chair Clark. First off, Melini, thank you again for your time tonight. I think we're all in agreement that this messaging would have been great to see at the beginning of this session tonight. And I'd like to make a recommendation to staff that possibly some element of this and the fiscal impact of a build-out be included as a prelude to any future zoning meetings to set a stage for the community as we go into the discussions. With that, I'm going to take a slightly different approach to Commissioner Nichols' view. The discussion we had tonight in that, I don't see that as being plopped right in the middle of a single-family residence that doesn't have a comparable. There are other units just to the east and the Gulf Villas that are in that area. But more importantly, to your point tonight, I think we're going to see more of this. And the limited land space, we're going to see more high-density landing in places where we traditionally see lower-density residences. And we're going to have to find a way to make that palatable to the community if we're going to maintain our tax base and from a sales tax future that we have when we build out on that. So I think there's a challenging future for the commission and the town as we go forward.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson, I'll get it one of these days. Yeah. Hi, Melini, and thank you again, as always, for doing such a good job. My question is there any, in the long-range planning, are there any areas of incorporation, I'm saying the wrong word,
annexation,
thank you, in the long-range plans that could help with some of this?
Sure. So Chair Clark, Commissioner Wilson, the town has an annexation policy, and we've actually, the town council approved it, where it actually shows areas that the town may be interested to annex with some time frames around those. But also within the general plan, we are legally required to have to plan for outside of our boundaries. So it's called a planning area, and it does extend beyond the jurisdictional boundaries, and that is if you were to annex an area or anything, it already has your land use designation on there. So that is also included in the long-range plan.
All right, thank you very much, Commissioner Wilson. Do we have any other comments, questions? None from me, so thank you very much, Ms. Simpson. All right, and with that, do we have a motion to adjourn?
Chair, we have a planning update, Chair.
I'm ready. I'm so anxious to get out of here. I'm skipping.
Tonight, somebody's hungry.
I am not hungry. I'm tired. All right. So, yes, planning update, Mr. Space. I was trying to save you some time.
Okay. I promise to keep it quick. So, on February 27th, we have a second neighborhood meeting scheduled in this room for the extra space storage on Oracle and Hardy by the Circle K. If you'll recall, they're wanting to do a PAD for themselves to kind of bring their site kind of up into code standards today.
What was the date on that again?
February 27th.
Thank you.
And we'll remind you, of course, before that goes out. And then so far for next month's commission agenda, we don't have any items. So stay tuned.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay. Now, do I have a motion to adjourn?
With that, I make a motion we adjourn this evening's meeting.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I will second that.
Thank you. We are adjourned at 9:15 p.m. Thank you so much, and we'll maybe see you next month.